Move is not good to go. In other news, the race to trace people who could have that fatal strain of meningitis.
The return of face masks and lengthy queues after a sixth former and uni student die from a meningitis outbreak. I'm LBC's Emma Corr, who's been on campus in Kent.
How we shed tears for those influencers and others who want to come back from Dubai, but they fear higher tax bills. Bailey Nelson is a Dubai-based influencer.
I think people do have a lot of hatred towards Dubai. A lot of people say you wouldn't have the same reaction if I moved to Spain, for example. Mm. And the difference is I'd be paying Spanish taxes instead of UK taxes, but it's just not something that would be bought up.
And to Scotland, where MSPs will vote on an assisted dying bill for terminally ill. That's later tonight. Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the UK's relationship with the US is again under the spotlight after Donald Trump criticised Keir Starmer's approach to the Iran war. The US president has called on allies to send ships to help reopen the Strait of Hormuz, the vital shipping route for global oil supplies. Yesterday, Keir Starmer said he wouldn't be drawn into a wider war in the Middle East. Speaking to reporters in the Oval Office overnight, Mr. Trump said he was disappointed by the UK's reluctance to send help.
The UK, which we sort of considered the Rolls-Royce of allies, right? Wouldn't you say? They were the oldest and they were going to be there. And I say it would be really helpful if you'd send over a couple of ships and if you have some minesweepers, which they do. And the Prime Minister is a nice man. I think he's a very nice guy. He says, well, I'd like to ask my team. I said, you don't have to worry about a team. You don't have a team. You're the Prime Minister. You can make a decision.
More people in Kent are being urged to take up the offer of antibiotics to help tackle a meningitis outbreak. It follows the deaths of two people in the Canterbury area. Anyone who went to the Club Chemistry nightclub on the 5th, 6th or 7th of March has been told to obtain preventative treatment. Louise Roberts is the club's owner and says it'll be closed for the rest of the week.
We've lost members of our community and we're just not going to risk anything else, anyone else. Until we feel that there's more control over it.
Scotland could become the first nation in the UK to legalise assisted dying when MSPs vote on the issue tonight. Members of the Scottish Parliament won't be restricted by party lines when they make their decision. Critics say MSPs should focus instead on improving end-of-life care, but those in favour say approving the bill would provide choice, compassion and dignity. The Chancellor is to announce £2.5 billion of funding for artificial intelligence and quantum computing. Rachel Reeves will use a speech in London today to say she's committed to the UK to having the fastest adoption of AI in the G7. And an industry body has warned the cost of fixing all the potholes on roads in England and Wales has reached a record £18.6 billion. The government says progress is being made on repairs, but the Asphalt Industry Alliance has described the situation as a national disgrace. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,317. It closed up 56 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, a cloudy start for many, but bright spells developing for England and Wales later, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Need anything from Tesco?
Snacks and milk, love.
How about discounts on holidays abroad?
Don't forget fruit and veg for our school.
Free nappies for premature babies.
And the quiet hour in store to shop in peace.
Can I get £2.50 cinema tickets on Tuesdays?
We know you need more than just groceries from us. We do all this because every little helps. For further information, visit tescoplc.com/need anything from Tesco.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Watch your 4 minutes after seven on Tuesday, March the 17th. So, limited support overseas from Sir Keir Starmer towards President Trump. And what he wants more help in the trying to secure the Strait of Hormuz, but more support domestically. A package unveiled by the Prime Minister yesterday morning, shortly after we came off air.
I'm announcing immediate support for vulnerable heating oil customers today, providing £53 million for those households that are most exposed.
But there's already talk of fuel rationing, asking you to drive less, and possibly temporary speed restrictions, again, because we will burn less petrol or diesel. We'll give you the full details of that and the background as that emerges. In other news,
a nursery worker described as an evil paedophile has been sentenced after sexually abusing five toddlers in Bristol. I'm LBC's Thea Rickard with the details.
The desperate race to trace possibly thousands after that fatal streak of meningitis down in Kent will bring you a full report on that. Meanwhile, elsewhere in the UK, Lisa Fleming is in from Edinburgh, one of the many Scots with a terminal illness, supporting the move to introduce assisted dying in Scotland and a bill later tonight.
I've been living with incurable secondary breast cancer now for almost 9 years. I have a terminal diagnosis. For me, this bill is so important because it will allow us that choice.
Plus, in the world of car parks, NCP, surely one of the most fantastic companies where you simply have a bit of land and you charge people to park for it with very little maintenance, on the verge of collapse, thousands of jobs to go. I'll be asking, why suddenly have we seemed to have gone off parking our cars?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
An increasingly isolated Donald Trump lashing out at Britain and other allies yesterday after they rejected his call to protect the Strait of Hormuz. Giving a press conference yesterday afternoon, President Trump had this to say concerning the United Kingdom and our Prime Minister.
I was very surprised with the United Kingdom, because the United Kingdom, 2 weeks ago, I said, why don't you send some ships over? And he really didn't want to do it. I said, you don't want to do it. We've been with you. You're our oldest ally. And we spend a lot of money on, you know, NATO and all of these things to protect you. I mean, we're protecting them. We're working with them on Ukraine. Ukraine's thousands of miles away, separated by a vast ocean. We don't have to do that, but we did it. Well, Biden did it. I mean, I have to be honest with you. Biden got taken to the cleaners. But we worked with them in Ukraine. We don't need to work with them in Ukraine. And then they tell us that we have a mine ship around and they don't want to do it. I think it's terrible. No, I was very surprised. I told him, you know, we requested two aircraft carriers, which they had, and he didn't really want to do it. And then right after the war essentially ended, you know, meaning they were obliterated, he said, I would like to send the aircraft carriers. I said, I don't need them after the war has ended and won. I need it before the war. So I was very upset with, not upset, I was not happy with the UK. I think they'll be involved, yeah, maybe. But they should be involved enthusiastically. We've been protecting these countries for years with NATO.
Now, this has caused a degree of confusion in Whitehall because, yes, we do have two, or the United Kingdom can boast two aircraft carriers, but one of which is not fit for service. The other is being readied for deployment in the Arctic, which means it would have different kind of kits applied to be able to function in and around the Strait of Hormuz, and one is not good to go. So I think we probably teach that with a degree of salt, perhaps. Meanwhile, the President, as is his wont, doubled down later in the day in the Oval Office.
The UK, which we sort of considered the Rolls Royce of allies, right? Wouldn't you say? They were the oldest and they were going to be there. And I say it would be really helpful if you'd send over a couple of ships and if you have some minesweepers, which they do, be very helpful. And the Prime Minister is a nice man. I think he's a very nice guy. He says, well, I'd like to ask my team. I said, you don't have to worry about a team. You don't have a team. You're the Prime Minister. You can make a decision. Well, I have to speak to my people. I said, you don't have to speak to anybody. So it was very disappointing. And then after we obliterated them and destroyed their military, the whole thing, and it became a much safer zone, he said, we're going to send over two aircraft carriers. I said, I don't want them anymore. I don't want them after we win. I want them before we start. I don't need your aircraft carriers after we've already won. So, you know, those things are very disappointing.
confused, you probably should be. Let's bring some experts in to help prompt our opinion and our conversation later. First up is Kim. Now, Lord Darroch, who served as UK ambassador to the US during the first Trump administration, also as former UK National Security Advisor. Lord Darroch, good to have you on. Can I read you the concluding paragraph of the leader in today's Times newspaper? Sir Keir, as in Starmer, may not want to join President Trump's war, but the conflict demands a British response. When the dust settles, the Gulf states will remember who it was who stood by their side. How fair a summation is that in your view? Morning, Lord Darroch.
Morning, Nick. It's not unfair. It's a reasonable thing to say. It's absolutely true that the Gulf states, who are long-term friends of ours, are expecting us to do something. But you put your finger on it when you said that the accounts that that President Trump has given of his conversations with Prime Minister Starmer are rather different from the accounts that you get from Whitehall on those conversations. And I think it's, I mean, I say this as a former advisor myself, I think it's perfectly reasonable for the Prime Minister to say to the President, OK, we'll see what we can do to help, but I need to consult my experts. Because a lot of, there's a lot of, I mean, I'm not a naval expert myself, but I do know that, that military experts are sceptical that sending minesweepers or large and rather vulnerable warships, when the shipping lanes, which need protecting, are only about 3 miles off the Iranian coast, and they have drones, they have explosive-packed fast boats, they have mines, and they have missiles, they're very, very vulnerable. And it'll be a very different story if a British ship is going through the strait and gets hit by a missile and sunk, and there are casualties. So I think it's right for the Prime Minister to think carefully about this. He's not said no, but he's saying we need to think about what the best thing we do in these circumstances is, and it's quite difficult.
Noting that it must be like juggling with a live firework, you touched on it briefly there, Lord Darroch. How has Sir Keir performed in handling President Trump in this area?
Well, it's a very challenging thing handling President Trump in this area, and he seems at the moment to be picking on the UK, although it's actually quite isolated internationally. I don't think anyone is lining up. There's not a queue there of people lining up to offer him help. I think it's right that Keir should keep talking to him. I think it's right that you shouldn't lash out publicly in response to the things that he is saying and try and deal with all this calmly and think through what our options are. I don't know whether there'll be long-term consequences to the relationship between the two of them from these outbursts, but I think the President is feeling rather vulnerable and at a bit of a loss to know what to do, because the Iranians are essentially fighting an economic war, not a military war, in response to the American attack. And I think they hadn't anticipated this.
I will leave it there. There seems to be a slight issue on the line. I'm grateful to you. Thank you. Kim, Lord Darroch, former UK ambassador to the US and also former UK National Security Advisor. Well, Lord Darroch, they're saying he's no naval expert, so let's turn to someone who is at 12 minutes after 7. Tom Sharp is a former, was with the Royal Navy. He was commanded nearly 30 years, commanding four different warships, and joins me now. What do you think should be the level of military response offered by the Prime Minister to President Trump? Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think we should be leaning into this more than we are. It wasn't our fight. We didn't start it, but it's becoming our fight. This is not an over there problem. This is affecting prices in the UK. We have a Navy. We should use it appropriately. And I think there are five lines of effort, to use that military planning term, in train right now that the UK are putting together. I just think we should have been faster and more decisive in our messaging around those five lines of effort, because they're thin, but they're quite good.
What will that achieve? What does success look like here, Tom?
Well, success is opening the strait. Now, that is a difficult proposition, and it's high risk, no doubt. The Houthis taught us that, and the Houthis learned everything they know from Iran. And the threats in the Strait of Hormuz are more difficult than they were in the Bab el-Mandeb Strait in the Red Sea. No doubt about it. There's an air threat, a surface threat, and a subsurface threat. And they need to be written down to a high degree before you can send warships in there. So if we're talking about sending a ship in to escort merchant vessels, then that is high risk and requires careful consideration. But there's a lot of other things we can do and are doing that support that wider effort. And I think we should be more proactive in our messaging of that.
You're a Navy bloke down to your boots, Tom. I was speaking with Lord West yesterday, who I'm sure you know or know of at least, and he was expressing a degree of embarrassment. He said the Navy normally travels towards the side of guns, not the other way. Do you share that level of embarrassment, Tom?
We've caught ourselves right in the crosshairs of a 30-year problem. I'm calling it that. It's a 30-year erosion of our armed forces. It's got thinner and thinner and thinner because successive governments have prioritised elsewhere. Fine. This was never going to come home to roost at a moment of our choosing. And here we are. We've now got very, very few ships and people and support logistics to get involved. And then on top of that, our operational decision making, as this was obviously going to happen. If these discussions we're having now, we should have had a month ago. And elements of the Navy did. But between the Navy and the decision makers, the Navy aren't the decision makers, they just offer options. Between the Navy and the decision makers, that got confused. And so we are late out of the door with our very few assets. So it's embarrassing, and we look indecisive and we look thin, which we are.
Lastly, obviously, militarily, I defer to you and your view that we should get involved. Economically, I can see the argument to get involved because of the Strait of Hormuz. But ultimately, again, coming back to the military, aren't we edging into a war where there seems to be absolutely no plan as to how it is to end? And respectfully, Trump and his team seem to make it up almost on the day. Tom?
Yeah, there is a plan. I was involved in the writing of it once upon a time. But rather like I just described the breakdown between our Navy and our decision makers, the same thing seems to be happening in America. There's a plan. It's many lever arch files full in CENTCOM. Between CENTCOM and the Pentagon and the White House, there appears to be a level of confusion. And I think, well, we know why. It's because that isn't planned. So when the Prime Minister says, let me speak to my people, that's met with derision, because that's not the way POTUS operates. He makes decisions on his own. And that's what we're seeing now. I mean, there is no way the Strait wasn't going to become contested in this way. We should have been further ahead of it. But like I say, I think this fight is ours, whether we started it or whether we like it or not. And I think we should be much more forward-leaning in the way we're dealing with it now.
Always enjoy speaking with you. Thanks, Tom. Tom Sharp served over nearly 30 years as a Royal Naval Officer, commanding four different warships. Well, there's the economic argument and the military argument, but there's also, one might argue, the rational argument. And I hear what Tom says there, but we are now getting closer into a war where there seems to be absolutely no plan as to how it ends. So which is the course to track? By the way, we'll revisit my fuel tracker, as, of course, they're now talking about fuel rationing, potentially. In other news,
the return of face masks and lengthy queues after a sixth former and uni student die from a meningitis outbreak. I'm LBC's Emma Corr, who's been on campus in Kent.
7:16 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Keir Starmer will hold talks with his cabinet later following renewed criticism from President Trump over his response to the Iran war. More people in Kent are being urged to take up the offer of antibiotics to help tackle a meningitis outbreak. And Scotland could become the first nation in the UK to legalise assisted dying when MSPs vote on the issue later. LBC weather, a cloudy start for many. Some bright spells developing for England and Wales later. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The Archies on the M1 southbound. One lane is closed because a car has broken down at Junction 11 for Luton. The Archies on the M25 anti-clockwise after an accident earlier between Junction 28 for the A12 and Junction 27 for the M11. On the M40 northbound, the exit slip road at Junction 3 for Loudwater is closed for emergency barrier repairs. In East Dulwich, Lordship Lane northbound is closed from East Dulwich Grove to the Goose Green roundabout. That's because of a gas leak. Emergency water main works in Sutton means Cedar Road is closed both ways between Brighton Road and Cedar Garden. On the Tube, there are minor delays on the Piccadilly line between Acton Town and Rayners Lane. That's because of cancellations. And Turnpike Lane station on the Piccadilly line is exit only. That's because of some flooding.
LBC.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure. I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate. Digital taxes.
Mm-hmm. It's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah. Probably will need some 2x4s. I've got to take the van in for a new fan belt. Squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
At Kia, we know that inspiration begins with a first. Your first job, your first love, your first home. Now it's time for your first drive in the new Kia EV2 at our first drive weekends. It's your chance to be one of the first to test drive the Kia EV2 with its innovative technology and elegant eye-catching design. It's small in size, but big in personality. Discover what driving electric really means. Search Kia First Drive Weekends to reserve your place today.
Kia.
Movement that inspires.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Trains at Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star. Oh, wow.
Oh, made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 7, Tony coming to you as the first caller. Alan, you're in line as well. Quickly telling you the front pages. I have to say the story, and we're going to give you full details on this. The race to trace people down in Kent with this fatal strain of meningitis is the front page of many of the papers. Thousands told get help now. The meningitis risk is the Daily Mail. The Sun, vapes spread killer bug. This is the idea that students at that nightclub in Kent shared vapes. Terror on the campus is the front page of the Daily Mirror. It's also the splash, the front page of the Daily Telegraph. Race to stop meningitis spreading nationwide. And a photograph of one of the victims who's identified as a girl called Juliet, an A-level student. Absolute tragedy, of course, for her parents and the rest of her family. The other big story running on a couple of the other front pages is the latest as regards story we're looking at, as regards Trump and the relationship with the United Kingdom. Metro simply saying Donald's trumped. And for the Eye, UK in talks on Royal Navy role in Gulf to end oil blockade. Go to the LBC app for more details, by the way, about that meningitis outbreak. Oh, we've lost Tony. So we have Chris in the world. Chris, you're on the radio. Your view. No, Tony, we've got... Whoa, it's all up and down. What's happening? Goodness
knows. I'm here.
Tony, you're here. We've found you. We've found you. Yes. Don't worry. I'm like a minesweeper, whatever it is. I've honed in on my target. Tony, your view. What do we do?
Oh, we'll have to send you out there then, Nick.
That's the last person you need. The last. What should we be doing, Tony?
Well, I mean, it'd be great if this regime was overthrown, because obviously it's just awful.
Which is Trump or the Ayatollah?
But,
or Starbuck?
Yeah, well, both, yeah. But Trump started this war without any consultation with the Allies,
yep.
No plan, and he expects us to jump when he says. He wants to put our ships in the firing line. He should have thought of this before he started the war.
If we listen to the Royal Naval Commander, Tom Sharp, nearly 30 years commanding ships, he's saying, look, effectively, we are in it. We have to keep the Strait of Hormuz open. It is the role of the Royal Navy. We need to go. He knows far better and he's far braver than I. What would you say to him, Tony?
Well, what he has shown is how unprepared we are if we need to defend this island.
Yes. Lastly, the way that Sir Keir Starmer is handling the relationship with Donald Trump, how many points out of 10 would you give him?
Well, Nick, we've had many conversations about Keir Starmer, and they've all been critical, but in this time, it's great to see him standing up to Trump.
Good. So what, you give him an 8, a 9? What sort of mark?
Yeah, an 8.
Give him 8 out of 10. All right. Tony, look after yourself. Sorry about the confusion at the top. Chris is in the whirl, and I've got him now. Chris, what should the reaction be from the United Kingdom? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm a priest, and regardless of that, I do look at things as a whole. And
right.
One thing I was thinking about, maybe a couple of months ago, when Trump did his mission in Venezuela
right.
and mentioned about how much he was going to put that the oil reserves and stuff back into, you know, rebuilding the country. And then we come forward a month or two. And there's a couple of things that I find quite ironic and quite contradictory. First of all, he always mentions he's got the most powerful military in the world, but then he's complaining about our Prime Minister not making any decisions.
Well, and others, France, Germany and others, yes, indeed.
And others, yes. But then, of course, if you've got the most powerful military in the world, and, you know, including Marines, etc., why do you need our minesweepers?
So what would your decision be as the deployment of UK, what they call military assets, or I'm going to call the Navy and warships? What would you say?
I would say we have to just protect our own assets for the time being.
Yes.
And also also our allies, of course. But
lastly, Chris, protect our own. And that's why I think Sir Keir Starmer initially was wrong, because we had military bases under attack to at least allow protection of our own citizens. But protect our own, does that mean protect our own economic interests, i.e. try and get the Strait functioning again? Chris?
I'm afraid it's a mixture of both. If I quickly add, my uncle, God rest his soul, actually died in Cyprus. Fighting.
In what circumstances? As a man of, in the military, do you mean?
In the military,
oh,
yes.
Oh, my goodness, I'm so sorry. Right.
On the border. So, I mean, I do think, of course, which I think most of us are under, you know, regardless of whether it's actually the United Kingdom.
Yes. Well, I'm terribly sorry, Michael. So no wonder you'll feel so close to this one. Chris, I have to move on. Obviously, condolences on that, commiserations on that. Thank you. We will take more calls on that. And in the next hour, we're going to be talking about the idea that more than £50 million has been found to help you if you heat your house through heating oil. We're going to try and get an idea of actually how you get hands on your cash. But more broadly, for so many more of us, we could be talking about fuel rationing. So it's time again for this.
Nick Ferrari's Fuel Tracker on LBC.
And, of course, that is Gasolina there by Daddy Yankee as I go around the country, initially starting in London and in Scotland, and then the next hour we go to other parts. But let's start with London. Daniel in Golders Green. Now, when we first brought Daniel into the fray, we were looking at petrol at £1.34.9 and diesel £1.42.9. Then it went up to £1.39.9 and £1.55.9. Then on Friday, we had unleaded at £1.42.9 and diesel £1.55.9. Daniel in Golders Green looks at, give us a loan to me now, and we've been looking at the prices. What are we looking at this morning then?
Well, good morning, Nick. I can report to you that here in London, prices at the pumps have gone up again.
Oh.
A litre of unleaded petrol is this morning £1.45.9.
Right.
And diesel is £1.62.9.
So that is, if I've got that right, that's 3p respectively on both of them, isn't it? No, 7p on diesel. I'm so sorry, 7p on diesel, Daniel.
Yeah, Nick, that's right. It's 7 pence on diesel, and it's around 3p on unleaded.
Safe driving, Daniel. Thank you. That's in London. Let's go completely the other end of the country. We go up to Scotland, and Murdo is standing by in Octobuckty. Now, just to remind you, when we started, it was coming in at 132.9 with unleaded, 145.9. Then when we first checked in, it had gone up to 139.9 for unleaded, 155.9. Remind everybody, Murdo, on Friday, the prices you reported were for unleaded
140.9, Nick.
And for diesel?
Diesel, 159.9.
Where do we find ourselves this morning, Murdo?
Today and Tuesday, we find ourselves unleaded at 143.9, and diesel is 168.9.
Safe driving to you. We'll talk again possibly at the end of the week. So that's a 3p rise in unleaded and a 9p a litre rise. Wow. You can see why they're getting nervous in diesel. Thank you, both of my fuel trackers there, and we'll track the prices in the southwest and the northeast in the next hour. Okay, more on fuel to come, but at 7:27, let's go to this horrific story. Antibiotics will be handed out to thousands of students in a race to trace and stop the spread of deadly meningitis across the country as students get ready to go back to their homes and universities, of course, for the Easter break. Emma Corr is LBC's South East England correspondent and joins me with full details now. Emma, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, the scene at the University of Kent campus echoing what we saw 6 years ago. Hundreds of people queuing up, wearing masks, spaced metres apart, this time to collect antibiotics they're being offered following this rare meningitis outbreak. In the past few minutes, the UK Health Security Agency has just confirmed this is meningitis B, a fast-acting bacterial infection. And this is why students who share accommodation with cases, their families, pupils and parents at the same schools as some of those who are now in hospital, are eligible to collect the drugs. And I spoke to some of them.
I'm concerned for myself and my family. I just want to keep myself safe.
I just think it's quite a scary thing as well, because obviously two people have already died from it. And it was only just reported yesterday, so we don't actually know how long it's been kind of in the area.
Obviously a bit worried, but we're feeling that the authorities are trying to do as much possible as they can to sort the situation out. So we just listen to the guidelines, see what they say today.
We're more here to be safe and sorry, you know.
I'm worried because I have a weak immune system, so I'm trying to get home as quick as possible, really.
Well, we know an 18-year-old at a school in Faversham died from the infection on Saturday, and it was confirmed on Sunday. A student at the University of Kent had also died. The UK Health Security Agency say 11 other people are seriously ill in hospital, and two other schools, one in Canterbury, one in Ashford, each confirming they have a case. It's been reported health officials were alerted to cases of meningitis late last week, but the UK Health Security Agency, they've insisted they were notified of a cluster of cases late on Saturday. We're now being told this outbreak is linked to events at a nightclub in Canterbury on the 5th, 6th and 7th of March, which 2,000 people visited, and they're now being urged to get antibiotics as well. Dr. Emma Wall is a professor of clinical infectious diseases at Queen Mary University of London and has told us health officials are taking the steps they can to stop the spread.
This meningococcus is exquisitely sensitive to antibiotics when they're given early. So the most important thing is people who are feeling like they're more unwell than usual. The thing to remember also is that the symptoms don't all come in a triad. If you're not feeling well, you're not right, you're not sure, seek medical help, even if you don't have one of the cardinal symptoms.
And the symptoms of meningitis, Nick, are high fever, being sick, severe and worsening headache, a rash which doesn't fade when a glass is rolled over it. Anyone experiencing any of those is urged to seek urgent medical care. There really does seem to be a huge amount of concern around this outbreak, particularly within schools. Some parents saying to me yesterday they're now taking their children out until this gets under control.
LBC's Emma Corr reporting. Alan, you'll be the next caller. Let's do it the other side of the news when I can give a good run to it. And as we're talking about conflict in the Middle East and the rising cost of petrol and possible fuel rationing, should we celebrate a London landmark, albeit one under threat?
The oldest Indian restaurant in the UK that served the likes of Mahatma Gandhi and Charlie Chaplin turns 100 years old today, but may soon be forced to close down. I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the details.
It's 7.30, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. News time then, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer will hold talks with his cabinet later after Donald Trump again criticised his response to the Iran war. European countries, including the UK, are resisting the president's call for help to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. More people in Kent are being urged to take up the offer of antibiotics to help tackle a meningitis outbreak. Anyone who went to the Club Chemistry nightclub on three nights from March the 5th is being told to obtain treatment as a precautionary measure. And Scotland could become the first nation in the UK to legalise assisted dying when MSPs vote on the issue later. Members of the Scottish Parliament won't be restricted by party lines when they make their decision. LBC weather, a cloudy start for many, some sunny spells developing for England and Wales. Later, a high of 14 degrees.
Hey, smart speaker. Play LBC.
Good morning, I'm Nick Ferrari. It's time to get to your calls.
First time caller. A little bit nervous.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for taking my call.
They have no Navy, they have no Air Force, and they have no leadership. We could call it a tremendous success right now, or we could go further, and we're going to go further.
Hear every side of the story.
Why do people think that Trump wants to bring democracy to Iranians while he's dismantling democracy in his own country?
There is a general feeling within our government that defence is something that we have to vastly up because of what's happening in the world, and they will find a way of doing it.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone. And when we say everyone, we mean your dad, Dan, Danielle, Dean, Dave, Del, Del's delivery driver Denise, Denise's dentist Dinesh, and Devon's strongest man, Donathan. Donathan? Donathan, that can't be right. Donathan? Well, whatever your name is, if you're a real person, investing is for you too. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
It's hard to concentrate when you're worried about your health. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world. Like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
At AXA Health Insurance, we build our teams with people who care. So when you need us, we're here to support you. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. Pre-existing conditions are not covered.
Play.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34, Ben, looking at some of your emails and texts, quite high scores for how Sir Keir Starmer is handling the situation, although many of you share with me the initial outbreak of this conflict, possibly more to defend British citizens, but now handling, as I say, the ticking time bomb, the live firework, the live grenade that is President Trump, no easy task. And we'll come to more, Alan, as I say, you'll be the next caller. Actually, it'll be interesting to speak to you, Alan. I know you're in Norway, so we get the Norwegian perspective. But into the world of business now. Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM and joins me, and I understand we're talking about a breaking story here, a close call for close brothers. You better explain to listeners, I know who they are, but I know damn certain you know who they are, but why are they so significant? Good morning to you, Christian.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, close brothers, not a high street bank, not a player that everybody would have heard of, but a bank nonetheless. Probably most famous, or possibly infamous these days, for being very involved in the motor finance mis-selling scandal that you and I have talked about a lot, and the redress scheme and the compensation scheme that's running through the system at the moment. What happened is that last night, or just before the markets closed yesterday afternoon, an outfit called a short seller, this is somebody who bets that a company's share price is going to go down, and they'll make a lot of money if they're right, released some research claiming that Close Brothers is on the hook for much more in the mis-selling scandal than they're currently saying, and that they think in a worst-case scenario it could be pretty catastrophic. Now, Close Brothers have said we absolutely dispute this research, this allegation. They have got results out this morning that we will be poring over at City AM, the first top lines of which are emerging. It includes a plan for about 600 job losses in a bid to save 80-odd million quid. But it's a very long tale of the car finance mis-selling scandal that a lot of banks, including high street banks, have been stung by, and Close Brothers have as well.
As a financial expert, when you mentioned short selling, there's a movie that I absolutely loved, and one of my colleagues actually turned me on to it, The Big Short. How accurate is that for that kind of trade or those kind of dealings, in your view, Christian, as an expert?
I think The Big Short does a very good job of showing the story of high finance and maybe we could say low finance as well for good measure. I would also commend to our listeners Margin Call, which is another sensational movie about high finance and high stakes.
All right, let's move to a story that is front page of some of the city pages as they went to bed last night. And you'd have thought a business like NCP, you own a bit of land, very limited maintenance, and you charge people a fortune to park there, but things ain't going the way of this car park giant. Why not, Christian?
Yeah, very familiar sight. People driving into town centres, city centres, looking for somewhere to park. You would have thought, perhaps, wouldn't you, that this was a bit of a cash cow, just a big, fat stationary asset that charges people to come in and out all day, every day. It's a fairly extraordinary company that grew out of the ashes of blitzed London and some land purchases, which evolved over time to be these great concrete edifices into which we would all drive our cars and pay for the privilege. It's actually subsequently become owned by a Japanese entity, I think. Anyway, they have gone into administration. No laughing matter. Britain's biggest car park operator, National Car Parks. They've got 340 sites across the UK. There are about 600 jobs at risk. PwC has been called in to try and save the business. They're going to keep operating. They're going to keep these sites open for now. And PwC have observed that this firm has basically deteriorated over a number of years. Post-COVID, they say, as demand for parking has not recovered, people driving into town and city centres has not bounced back, and indeed commuter locations, where you can imagine they would have made a great deal of money, have suffered. If people are only going into towns and cities 2 to 3 days a week, that's going to have quite a sizable impact. So they have not been doing as well as you may have at first glance thought, and there will now be an effort underway to try to save as much of the business as possible.
Let's go to your front page. Get your company's house in order. Who's that directed at, Christian?
This is an extraordinary story that broke just as we were all preparing to wind down for the weekend. Company's House, the entity through which and into which every public and private business must file its accounts and keep its documents updated, has been revealed to have been sitting on for at least 6 months until they nipped it in the bud over the weekend, a major security glitch There are some videos out there that explain how it worked. Basically, there was a way, a very simple way, that you might stumble across to effectively access the confidential filings of every company that files its financial documents into Companies House. When they were alerted to this, they said, my God, they've nipped it in the bud, but conceded yesterday that the vulnerability existed for 6 months. What it meant, among other things, Nick, is that I could have gone in and made you a company director of any business I chose. I could have made you a director of M&S if I wanted. Now, I might have been in violation of the Computer Misuse Act and various bits of company law, but I could have done it. So it's an extremely embarrassing blunder for Companies House.
Grateful for your input. Thank you. Talk around the same time tomorrow. Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM, 7:39. Alan, thank you for hanging on the line in Stavanger. I'd love to hear how this is dominating, or not at all, Norwegian bulletins and front pages. Well, how big is the story playing there? Good morning.
Well, it's obviously a big story, Nick, but I would say that I am British. I just happen to be working in Norway. Right. Mm-hmm. And I do actually think I've got a solution to this that helps everything. America has started this war. Now, many of your listeners are thinking it's avoidable, possibly illegal, but equally, America are allies. We need to support them. We have interests. So what we do is we offer to provide our ships to replace American ships in other parts of the world to free up more American ships to sort their war out. We're helping them, we're being the ally, and we're helping America.
I don't know how many we've got. It's an interesting idea. Certainly no one else has thought of that. I would say question A, stock, i.e. how many ships have we got? I mean, I think we've only got 7 or 8 frigates in total, and France has already moved 9 to the has moved 9, won a bit of a... And so how long will it take to deploy what we have got to wherever the US Navy might be? Alan?
Well, probably a very similar time to deploy them to the Gulf. And let's remember, the Straits of Hormuz, it's a very congested area. What will more ships actually bring to the party?
Can I ask you lastly, watching on from, as a Brit, but currently living in Stavanger, a mark out of 10 for how Sir Keir Starmer has managed a very tricky relationship with President Trump?
I would give him a 9 out of 10 because, ultimately, we're not America's vassal state.
Grateful for your input. Thank you for still listening to LBC. Do stay in touch and happy landings as and when you decide to return. 7:41. Now to other matters and a horrific story you might have heard on the bulletins yesterday here on LBC. A nursery worker who raped and abused young children in his care, jailed for 24 years. LBC's Thea Rickard was at Bristol Crown Court for the sentencing yesterday and joins me now. Thea, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, an evil, incorrigible and dangerous paedophile was the judge's description of nursery worker Nathan Bennett. Bennett targeted, groomed and repeatedly abused 5 toddlers. Now, just a warning to listeners that what I have to say next is distressing, because Bennett was supposed to be caring for these toddlers at Partoo King Street Nursery here in Bristol, changing their nappies and helping them play. But instead, he preyed on the 2 and 3-year-olds to satisfy, as Judge William Hart said, his uncontrollable and ungovernable sexual interest in male toddlers. Bennett was caught after a staff member saw what was happening on CCTV last year and raised the alarm. He was arrested and questioned soon after.
Did you join to be a nursery worker so that you could have access to children?
In what way?
In a sexual way?
No.
Last month, it took a jury less than 4 hours to find Bennett guilty of 8 charges, including rape. The 30-year-old took the stand during his trial, accompanied by an intermediary, to make sure he understood the questions being put to him. The jury were told Bennett was autistic, though lacking a formal diagnosis. He was often seen holding ear defenders in the dock, looking down at the floor and rocking backwards and forwards in his seat. But when it came to sentencing, the judge accused Nathan Bennett of exaggerating his difficulties as a calculated tactic to try to deceive the jury and secure a more lenient sentence, before condemning his vile desires which polluted the innocence of his victims. The judge even went as far to say it'd be an insult to the autistic community to infer that Bennett's crimes were linked to neurodivergence. Gemma Kneebone is from the Crown Prosecution Service.
When we send our children to school or to preschool or to nursery each day, we do so trusting that they will be cared for and kept safe. Bennett took advantage of that trust, seeking out a profession that gave him access to the most vulnerable of victims.
Nathan Bennett has now started his 24-year jail term, while the parents of his young victims begin a sentence of their own, preparing to deal with the impact his sickening abuse could have on their sons.
LBC's Thea Rickard reporting now. As Thea mentioned there, Bennett claimed to be autistic, but there was no proof, although he used those ear defenders. The judge saying it would be an insult to the autistic community to suggest this was any excuse for what he'd done. So, yet again, someone convicted of high level of offence, claiming in some way, shape or form, autism could have contributed to this. Let's turn to Tom Purser, who's CEO of Autism Action. For those who are genuinely have this condition, how do they react to people who would seem to be purporting to claim it as some form of mitigation? Tom, good morning.
Morning, Nick. Thank you for raising this, and thank you for treating it in such a sensitive way. It is such a difficult topic, and many autistic people will be hearing this news and be absolutely outraged by the notion that this individual's actions had anything to do with being autistic. Autistic people do not commit crimes at any higher rate than non-autistic people, and in fact are more likely to be victims of crime than non-autistic people. So it's really important that we have good public understanding, good public commentary, particularly around horrific high-profile cases such as this one.
How is that public awareness, that education of the public to be achieved, Tom?
There is not enough of it. And in fact, at Autism Action, we're really worried at the moment that public understanding, the public narratives that we see playing out in the media have actually turned quite sour in recent months and years. You've done really good work in challenging some of the misinformation on your show around connections to things like paracetamol and other wild claims are made. What we really need to see is a good understanding of the breadth of the experiences that autistic people have, that some autistic people will have a learning disability, that some autistic people have relative independence and don't need support. We need to understand how autistic people can be supported in situations. Some of the challenges that autistic people have, you've talked about the challenges around access to education on your show, and that's absolutely right. There are big challenges that autistic people face, and they are not helped by being associated with awful crimes such as this one.
Hear, hear. I'm sure people can find more details on your website, Tom.
Absolutely. They can come and join our fight to challenge misinformation at autismaction.org.uk.
Grateful for your time. Tom Purser is CEO of Autism Action. 7:46. Coming up later in the show,
a momentous day in the Scottish Parliament as MSPs literally grapple with matters of life and death. I'm Gina Davidson, and I'll bring you the latest on the progress of the assisted dying bill.
7:46 on LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has again criticised Sir Keir Starmer's response to the Iran war as the UK's relationship with the US comes under renewed pressure. More people in Kent are being urged to take up the offer of antibiotics to help tackle a meningitis outbreak. And the banking group Close Brothers has announced it's to cut around 600 jobs in the UK and Ireland as it looks to reduce annual costs by around £85 million. LBC weather, a cloudy start for many, some bright spells for England and Wales. Later, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Gough. The Arkies on the M1 southbound. There's one lane closed, the junction 11 for Luton, because a car's broken down. On the M25, anti-clockwise, the Arkies from junction 30 for Lakeside round to junction 29 for Romford after an accident earlier. It's slow in East Dulwich. Lordship Lane northbound is closed because of a gas leak, but in East Dulwich Grove and the Goose Green roundabouts. In Sutton, Cedar Road is closed both ways. That's for emergency water main repairs between Brighton Road and Cedar Gardens. On the trains, Thameslink, Great Northern, LNER and Hull trains have delays and cancellations. That's because of an investigation between Finsbury Park and Stevenage. GWR have delays of up to 20 minutes and cancellations between Paddington and Reading. That's because of an investigation on the Tube. There are minor delays on the Piccadilly line.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. All wobbly, all wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Actually,
this is
very relaxed.
George is up the river can without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus, UK only, no purchase necessary.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
A spectacle far beyond your imagination. Be amazed. Be moved. Be there. For an experience that will stay with you forever. Disney's The Lion King at London's Lyceum Theatre. Book now at thelionking.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before 8 is the time. Back to our views, or your views, of the United Kingdom's stewardship of that relationship with the US in a moment. Now, we all know this is a government that was elected with promises for growth, and you have to accept there have been challenges, not least what you see playing out in the Middle East right now. But perhaps a new way to try and spur that growth on is AI. And that's something that we'll be hearing more about. And some details now from Labour MP and Exchequer Secretary to the Treasury, Dan Tomlinson. Thank you for coming on, Secretary. What is it that we're going to hear from you and your senior colleague later today? Good morning.
Good morning, and it's very good to be with you. So today, the Chancellor's doing a big speech on economic growth. She'll be setting out some three big bets that she thinks the UK government should be making to support growth and productivity. One is investing in regional growth. The other is deepening and working on our relationship with the EU. And then the third, as you just mentioned, is around AI and particularly quantum computing, Nick, which is for those who are interested, traditional computers. They work by doing their calculations sequentially. Quantum computing can do calculations at the same time, which means that things that maybe would have taken years and years and years to do on old-fashioned computers can be done in minutes or days on quantum ones. And we want to back that new technology, which is growing. And here in the UK, there's lots of startups in that space. But can we see them scale and grow and be big British companies of the future? That's one of the things the Chancellor's talking about today.
In practical terms, then, how much money is invested in that field, that sector? And what does it go to? Does it go towards education, colleges, companies? Where would the money be spent?
Yes, so today the Chancellor's announcing £2.5 billion over the coming years. Most excitingly, I think, though I'll let your listeners decide, there's £500 million for a sovereign AI unit, which is really important. Matt Clifford, who you may have had on your programme before, is a real expert in this space. He worked with the government, and the previous government, in fact, on looking at what we can do to make sure that we have AI companies here in the UK rather than having them always disappear over to America or other countries. And that fund, that £500 million, which will be spent over the next 4 years, will invest in and support startups here in the UK and scale-ups to be able to grow and make sure we've got more employment in AI itself here. Because one of the risks, Nick, is that this new technology grows and expands, but all the employment happens in places like America, and we only suffer but the potential impacts in terms of people's jobs being moved or displaced. So we want to have the benefits here here in the UK.
You talk about employment. Is there a target figure for how many jobs she, you, hope you can create?
Yeah, so one of the studies that the Chancellor, that's in the government's press release today, talks about how we could have, I think, 100,000 extra jobs. That was some independent analysis that was carried out. But this is jobs particularly linked to quantum computing. On jobs more broadly, the Independent Office for Budget Responsibility, they set out in their forecast at the spring statement that, yes, they do think there will be an impact from AI in terms of on productivity, but that we will see employment rising in every year of the OBR's forecast out to 2030. It's something that they and the government, of course, will continue to look at, because when big technological change happens, there can be disruption in terms of people moving around in terms of jobs in the economy.
Now, while quantum computing might not be everyone's bag, growth certainly is. When do you imagine we will see? And I repeat, there are pressures not of your making with oil and everything else, but when might we see growth start to tick up a little bit, do you imagine, Mr. Tomlinson?
Growth is really very important, and it's important because it is the route to higher living standards for everyday families. Your listeners will know and will have experienced the fact we had the longest squeeze on wages since Napoleon was making his way around Europe in the 2010s. We've got to turn that around. GDP per person, which is a key metric, which is worth tracking because it's the size of the economy, but divided by the number of people here. That fell by 1% in 2022. It flatlined in 2024, and it grew by 1% in 2025. So we're turning things around. The OBR revised up their forecast for GDP per person back in March. But you're right to highlight that there's a lot of uncertainty around now in the economy. What's happening in the Middle East is actually going to have an impact on our shores. We've seen that already with the cost of heating oil, and the government stepped in with an intervention yesterday, and we'll of course keep monitoring the impact on the economy. The good news, just to reassure people in the short term, is that because of the action that the government took at the last budget, energy bills themselves in April, when the new price cap comes in, are going to fall by an average of £117. And we don't know yet what the impacts of these current changes in the last 2 weeks will have from the new price cap.
They might
June
be, of course, adversely affected by that. But you mentioned the intervention as regards people, mostly in rural areas, who rely on heating oil for their heating. More than £50 million has been made available, the Prime Minister said yesterday. How do people get their hands on that money? How is the money distributed?
Yeah, my understanding is that will be funds that are distributed by local authorities. There are already funds that local authorities do issue and do provide support for vulnerable people and those on the lowest incomes.
It will be means tested then.
It is for councils to decide, is my understanding, how these funds can be spent. And you're right to say, for many of us, we probably don't use heating oil or know many people who do. It's just around 3 or 4%, I think, in the country as a whole.
Yeah, it's greater in Northern Ireland than Scotland, of course. 60%
of households.
So how will they know? My listeners, and it may well be folk of Chipping Barnet, your constituency, because obviously it's a rural area. How will they know if they qualify?
Chipping Barnet's in North London. It's not Chipping Norton.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I misread it. Chipping Barnet, my apologies. North London. Well, there won't be many people with heating oil in North London,
no,
I imagine.
I don't know.
Out in the Cotswolds there might be, and out in Northern Ireland. So how will they know if they're going to get the money?
Yeah, so if people are using heating oil and they are seeing their costs go up, they should reach out to their local authority and be in touch with them. And the decisions on how the funds will be distributed will be made both in collaboration between MHCLG, the government department, and local councils.
Well, let's move to something that affects everybody from Chipping Barnet to Chipping Norton, which is the price of fuel, whether it's diesel or unleaded. And Professor Nick Butler, the former executive at BP and advisor to Gordon Brown, has said the UK could be hit by fuel rationing if the crisis were to deepen. Is the government taking that seriously?
Well, people should continue to fill up their cars as normal. I was just doing that yesterday. I have noticed, and I think people will have noticed, that the cost has ticked up.
What did you pay a litre, might I ask?
I paid 139.9. I watch it very closely because
That's a bargain.
Each day I walk past the garage on my way to work, and I've been watching it very closely. It's about £60, I think, to get to near full tank. Look, but...
Are we going to have fuel rationing?
Seriously, though, we have, this government, We inherited plans which would have meant that fuel duty itself would have gone up by 8 yep. pence since the general election. We've actually frozen fuel duty.
Until September.
And we're going to do so again in March. We'll, of course, review
there will be an increase in September, we know that. But how realistic is the likelihood of fuel rationing, would you say, Mr. Tomlinson?
I would say that people should continue to fill up their cars as normal. We can see there has been an impact on the price at the pumps in the last few days. People can use, and I would encourage people to Google Fuel Finder, which is this new thing that the Chancellor's been pushing and has now been implemented. I was actually on it myself just this weekend having a look, and it's now got a live feed of the price per litre at the garages in your area, in the whole country, and you can see. If I'd driven just an extra mile, I would have got an extra 2p off, but I didn't bother because I was in a rush.
If we're talking motor cars, President Trump said the United Kingdom used to be the Rolls Royce of allies. We are no longer. How do you react to that news?
Well, look, different people, particularly the President, will express their views and opinions, and of course they're very welcome and entitled to them. Underneath it all, underneath the froth and the words that are said from day to day, we have a long and abiding and a really deep and important relationship with our allies in the United States.
He doesn't see it that way, though, Mr. Thomas, currently.
Well, I don't know about that. Right now, UK military bases are being used by the Americans to support the efforts to get rid of the missiles that could have an impact on British nationals or any innocent civilian who's living or working in the Middle East. And we are working closely with them. As I say, we do have a really deep security partnership with them. And from time to time, presidents and prime ministers will come to different judgments. I'm really confident, and I do think it's a mainstream view across the public, that the Prime Minister has taken the right decision when it comes to not having us trying to engage with what I think at one point was termed regime change from the sky in Iran. Yes, you know, we don't support the Iranian regime and the IRGC and the terror that they inflict on their people and on the region, but we do want to make sure that we are protecting British national interests, not least because of the impact of what's happening in the Middle East on our shores.
I must leave it there. From an MP who's just filled up his tank, it's a drive for growth, as outlined later today from the Chancellor, but just now from Dan Tomlinson, Exchequer Secretary to the Treasury. Thanks for your time, Mr. Tomlinson. You've taken us to 1 minute after 8. Time for those LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, President Trump has renewed his criticism of Sir Keir Starmer for not backing his plan to secure the Strait of Hormuz. He's demanding help to reopen the vital shipping route, but Sir Keir says he doesn't want to be involved in a wider Iran war. Donald Trump says he once saw the UK to be a Rolls-Royce of allies, but he's disappointed by the reluctance to help. Former UK ambassador to the United States, Lord Darrick, has told Nick this morning he feels the Prime Minister is right to take a cautious approach.
Military experts are sceptical that sending minesweepers or large and rather vulnerable warships when the shipping lanes, which need protecting, are only about 3 miles off the Iranian coasts, and they have drones, they have explosive-packed fast boats, they have mines, they're very, very vulnerable. And it'll be a very different story if a British ship is going through the strait and gets hit by a missile and sunk.
More people in Kent are being urged to take up the offer of antibiotics to help tackle a meningitis outbreak. It follows the death of two people in the Canterbury area. Anyone who went to the Club Chemistry nightclub on the 5th, 6th or 7th of March have been told to obtain preventative treatment. Dr. Emma Wall is a professor of clinical infectious diseases and has told LBC that officials are taking steps to stop the spread.
This meningococcus is exquisitely sensitive to antibiotics when they're given early. So the most important thing is people who are feeling like they're more unwell than usual. The thing to remember also is that the symptoms don't all come in a triad. If you're not feeling well, you're not right, you're not sure, seek medical help, even if you don't have one of the cardinal symptoms.
Scotland could have become the first nation in the UK to legalise assisted dying later. Members of the Scottish Parliament won't be restricted by party lines when they vote on the bill. The final result is being seen as too close to call.
The banking group Close Brothers has said it's to cut around 600 jobs in the UK and Ireland. The firm says it's looking to reduce annual costs by around £85 million over the next 18 months. And train passengers who buy tickets with rail card discounts could soon face extra checks as part of a crackdown on fare dodging. People may be asked to scan their rail card or enter its details before purchasing. The Department for Transport says the move could save around £20 million a year in lost revenue. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,317. It closed up 56 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, a cloudy start for many. Some bright spells will develop for large parts of England and Wales later. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Chase is the digital bank that boosts your savings to 4.5% AER variable.
A boost?
Yep. It includes a 2.25% AER boost for the first 12 months.
Are they being boosted now?
All the time. Bedtime, gym time, romantic dinner time. And soon you could boost your way to...
Ah, beach time.
Boost your savings with Chase. Search Chase Boosted Saver. 18 plus UK residents available to new Chase current account customers for their first 31 days. 4.41% gross interest paid monthly. Eligibility and T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, it's 4 minutes after eight, Tuesday, March the 17th. Fuel rationing on the way and this fund to help you if you heat through heating oil. But how exactly does it work? Respectfully, I don't think even the government are fully aware as they talk of making more than £50 million available in that area. We'll look at that in more detail. In other news...
A momentous day in the Scottish Parliament as MSPs literally grapple with matters of life and death. I'm Gina Davidson and I'll bring you the latest on the progress of the assisted dying bill.
Taxing times if you're in Dubai and the drones keep on coming. By the way, if you take a photograph of the drone or some of the damage just to show and send it back home to show that you're all right or your kids are all right or whatever... You're being arrested. Yes, more arrests by Dubai authorities. What a treat it would be to live there. But now, as I say, taxing times, when people are concerned if they come back, are they going to face taxation? Some of the influencers. Bailey Nelson is an influencer. He has returned to the UK.
I think people do have a lot of hatred towards Dubai. A lot of people say you wouldn't have the same reaction if I moved to Spain, for example. And the difference is I'd be paying Spanish taxes instead of UK taxes, but it's just not something that would be bought up.
Car park giant NCP collapses. Why? Is this the true post-COVID world where we simply don't take our cars into major city centres, some of which are hit, of course, with congestion charge? Let's not lose sight of that. And in other news...
The life savings of a dog breeding couple in South Wales have been wiped after the local authority used a law that's usually reserved for drug dealers to prosecute them. I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Just after we went off air yesterday, the Prime Minister stood up and gave details of more than £50 million that will be directed into a contingency fund to help you, those of you who heat your house through heating oil. While nationally, the figure is actually quite low, in some parts of the United Kingdom, Northern Ireland and Scotland, it's considerably high, and certainly rural areas as well. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But there's also, so we say, a significant, or so the experts say, a significant shortfall of supply in oil within the next 2 months. And we even hear Nick Butler, a former head of strategy at BP and an advisor to Gordon Brown, raising the possibility of fuel rationing. Are you ready for that? They, the authorities, the government, are also asking us to drive as little as possible, candidly. Although many of you challenge me on this. If you live in a big city or even a town, you don't go for a run. Maybe if you have the delights of living in a rural idyll, you do occasionally go for a run. But with fuel prices the way they are, irrespective of whether it's diesel or unleaded you're buying, I don't think that. But could they bring in temporary speed restrictions, bring it down to 60? That's an idea that's being floated. And obviously fuel rationing. Let's start, though, with the heating oil. And in the last 15 minutes or so, I was speaking with Exchequer Secretary to the Treasury, Dan Tomlinson, a Labour MP. And I asked him how the support for homes using heating oil will actually be distributed in reality.
Yeah, my understanding is that will be funds that are distributed by local authorities. There are already funds that local authorities do issue and do provide support for vulnerable people and those on the lowest income.
It will be means tested then.
It is for councils to decide, is my understanding, how these funds can be spent. And you're right to say, for many of us, we probably don't use heating oil or know many people who do. It's just around 3 or 4%, I think, in the country as a whole.
Yes, but as we said during the interview, initially Northern Ireland, Scotland, don't you think they could have worked out how you will get your hands on the cash? Because this... I've heard from many of you that it's more than doubled. Well, let's get into this now. Rob is in Arbroath. Rob, thank you. You heat your home through heating oil. Can you give us a rough idea of the prices that you're having to pay? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Ness and Nick. Yeah, first of all, it's an absolute scandal. I'll tell you the latest price at the moment. Yeah. It was 61 pence a litre. It's now £1.45 a litre.
And that's over the last two and a half, three weeks or something.
Yeah, so I'm being quoted, Nick, yeah, I'm being quoted for 2,000 litres that will last us about 4 to 5 months. So I'm being quoted, used to be £1,100, now they're quoting me this morning, £3,038.
Now this,
no one can afford it.
No. Now this, if you recall, both the Chancellor and the Prime Minister said that they were going to crack down on what they call the gougers, the people doing that. That there's these people may as well wear ski masks when they come and rob you for your money for their oil.
Yeah, I mean, it's all a bunch of platitudes, to be honest, Nick. I mean, they're talking about a very, very small amount of money that will be distributed to people that are on benefits mostly. It won't hit the normal people,
no,
people like
the people
myself.
Who go out and work and pay the tax.
Yeah, and people in the 60s that haven't quite reached, the government retirement age. I mean, our house at the moment, Nick, is... I can tell you our house temperature is. It's 12 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
12 degrees. We are living... We shut off nearly all of our house. We have just two rooms at the moment habitable, and that is the bedroom and the sitting room. And that's because we have two tiny small electric heaters that keep us going, and that's all we have.
And... is it just you and your wife or your partner, or do you have children, or what's the story?
Yeah, it is. It is myself and my wife. Oh. We have a dog, but luckily the dog has a fur coat on.
So you're just having to wear extra sweaters and cope with 12 degrees, lastly.
Absolutely. And two or three hot water bottles in our bed. But, I mean, the biggest scandal is the fact that the government are just ignoring the North Sea oil that's on our doorstep, and they're cancelling oil licences and they're capping wells. And it's a total scandal.
It was £1,100 to fill up his tank. Now it's just north of £3,000, and the government vowing that they'll crack down on the gougers. Rob, stay in touch. Best wishes to you and your wife. And I don't say this glibly. Try and stay warm. I honestly don't say that glibly. As I've told you many times, when I was a kid, I grew up in a house where we had heating oil, and even then it was expensive. And that was many, many years ago. We certainly got through a few sweaters. Again, I don't say that with any humour at all. Be well. Thank you for that, Rob. Now, let's come to the other aspect, which is the idea of fuel rationing. So, is that coming any time soon? Back to the Secretary of the Treasury.
Well, people should continue to fill up their cars as normal. I was just doing that yesterday. I have noticed, and I think people will have noticed, that the cost has ticked up.
What did you pay a litre, might I ask?
I paid 139.9. I watch it very closely, because each day I walk past the garage on my way to work, and I've been watching it very closely. It's about £60, I think, to get to near full tank. Look, but...
Seriously, are we going to have fuel rationing?
Seriously, though, we have, this government, we inherited plans which would have meant that fuel duty itself would have gone up by eight pence since the general election. We've actually frozen fuel duty.
Until
September. And we're going to do so again in March. We'll, of course, review
there will be an increase in September, we know that. But how realistic is the likelihood of fuel rationing, would you say, Mr. Tomlinson?
I would say that people should continue to fill up their cars as normal. We can see there has been an impact on the price at the pumps in the last few days. People can use, and I would encourage people to Google Fuel Finder, which is this new thing that the Chancellor's been pushing and has now been implemented. I was actually on it myself just this weekend having a look, and it's now got a live feed of the price per litre at the garages in your area, well, in the whole country. And you can see, if I'd driven just an extra mile, I would have got an extra 2p off, but I didn't bother because I was in a rush.
Reality there, at least from Dan Tomlinson, the Exchequer Secretary to the Treasury. Let's bring in the conversation David Reiner, who's Professor of Technology Policy at the University of Cambridge, Assistant Director of the University of Cambridge's Energy Policy Research Group, and has advised successive governments on policies in this field. Joins me now. Professor, how effective or otherwise is fuel rationing in your view? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Effective. I mean, the biggest danger when it comes to this is, you know, public panic and panic buying. You know, going back to the kind of oil crises in the 1970s, what would happen would be people would queue up, fill their, you know, fill their vehicle up and tend to be driving around with more fuel than they would normally.
And so it's a vicious circle, isn't it? Everyone sees the queues at the pump and immediately go and gets their car and queues at the pump.
Yeah, and so you end up with this kind of nominal physical, you know, there is a genuine problem in terms of potentially if you have many weeks of this continuing in terms of a blockage in terms of the Strait of Hormuz. But the you know, the real danger is that this becomes a kind of self-perpetuating a problem, partly due to the kind of this almost panic over the, you know, your inability to access petrol.
So what would your advice to the government be currently, Professor?
Well, I mean, to some extent, what they are trying to do, and I think he said, as you know, I think the minister was saying, Philip, as normal, right?
Yeah.
So to some extent, if you're trying to create this anxiety, that would be a bad thing, right? So the more that you can do to try and reassure people that there are plans in place. Again, this is not the first time the Russian invasion of Ukraine 4 years ago. We've had, you go back to the fuel protests in the year 2000 when there were these blockades. Blockades that were kind of maybe the biggest disruption in the last, 25 years or so. So we've had a number of examples of this.
Effective? So that's the idea. There's also a suggestion that we might start to temporarily bring down speed restrictions, i.e. that is to say, on a motorway you could be limited to 65, on a dual carriageway we might bring you down to 35, whatever. Again, Professor, effectiveness of those?
Again, the concern then is that this would engender some sort of panic or wider concern than would be, than the benefit that you would get from shifting the speed limit by, a few miles an hour. So I think the real question is what kind of the broader kind of implications are for the way that people behave.
Grateful for your time. Thanks, Professor David Ryan, Professor of Technology Policy at the University of Cambridge, Assistant Director of the University of Cambridge's Energy Policy Research Group, and has advised previous governments on that. The idea of fuel rationing, if you're old enough, if you had a motor car back in 2000, I'm going to say the last time we did it, you know what, it was utterly ineffective. It just caused panic, and I don't think it actually achieved anything. And then, of course, it was only available for fire trucks and ambulances and everything else. Do we even look at temporary speed cutting the speed limits? We'll look at that as well. And in other news, taxing times for folk in Dubai who might want to come home, but they're worried of the tax they might have to pay. Natasha Turak is a Middle East correspondent based in Dubai. She says,
there are British expats all over the world. Many of them are in countries where they don't have to pay taxes, but there's a particular hatred. I call it DRS, Dubai Rage Syndrome.
Do you have DRS? Something in Formula One, wasn't it? Or a hatred? We'll look at that. It's 8:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, a government minister has said the UK's relationship with the United States remains deep and important despite fresh criticism of Sir Keir Starmer's approach to the war in Iran. Antibiotics are being offered to thousands of people who went to a nightclub in Kent to try and limit a meningitis outbreak. And Scotland could become the first nation in the UK to legalise assisted dying. LBC weather, a cloudy start for many, some bright spells for England and Wales. Later, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Gough. The Archies on the M25 anti-clockwise is partly blocked because a car's broken down, but in Junction 17 for Maple Cross and Junction 16 for the M40. It's heavy on the M1 southbound after a car broke down earlier at Junction 11 for Luton. There are queues on the A20 Swanley Bypass going out of town. It's partly blocked at the M25 because of an accident. It's heavy on the A3 going out of town. It's partly blocked at the Hook Junction because a van has broken down. In East Dulwich, Lordship Lane northbound is closed at the Goose Green roundabout. That's because of a gas leak. And on the trains, there are delays of up to 40 minutes and cancellations to services between King's Cross and Stevenage because of an investigation. So that's affecting East Coast mainline trains, including LNER, Thames Link and Great Northern.
This is LBC.
Right then, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Anglers, ramblers, climbers, five-a-siders, surfers, gamers, bikers, hang gliders!
Book clubbers.
Are we up for it? Let's go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event from just $14.99. Search Race for Life. Prices vary by event distance and participant age.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Your life's already digital. From banking and shopping to streaming and learning. So why does sorting government stuff still feel like such hard work? The government is introducing a new digital ID to make access to services quicker and more secure for everyone. But we need to hear from you. Your voice matters. Search Digital ID Consultation to have your say. Digital ID, making public services work for you.
Imagine your dream holiday made possible by comparing cheap flights on Kayak, walking on an unspoilt goes on for miles beach on the Sardinian coast, plunging into the splendour of an idyllic lagoon in Greece. Ah, yes, this is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare prices from hundreds of travel sites and airlines to find your dream deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to calls in just a moment, who's been holding the longest? Darren, coming to you. You want to talk about heating oil, that aspect. Just a couple of the emails. Many are pouring in emails, texts, social media. John in Winchester, just as oil companies are accused of making windfall profits on high oil prices, so the government makes a tax windfall. The government could choose to cap the per barrel price that they charge. That's an interesting point because, yes, same point here from David Vasey, if I'm saying that correctly. It's estimated the Treasury will receive additional taxes, etc., of over £1 billion for fuel, with them offering £53 million. The question, who is gouging now? Chris is furious. Why didn't you challenge the MP? Well, he lied about paying £1.39 a litre. Bizarrely, I happened, as I was being driven into, I happened to look at a Shell petrol station. I'm so sorry, what did I Shell? I'm in Sainsbury's. It was £1.35. So I can utterly believe that he paid £1.39. Away from that and to heating oil, Darren is in Bournemouth. Now, this affects you directly, Darren. Tell us your story. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Nick.
Hello.
The minister is a typical spin doctor.
Right.
He spent more time bumbling around an answer than giving you it direct. So
specifically about, which part?
So, the heating oil, 3 weeks ago, 53 pence.
Yep.
3 days ago, £1.53 to £1.71.
Goodness me.
It's an absolute joke. You get a minister that then says, oh, yeah, but the government are going to do everything. They come on, they spend 10 minutes saying what they're going to do, which is nothing, because I actually went and tried doing this, getting the grant or some money. All it was they're only giving you, if you're on benefits, £100.
Hang on, well, you know this from your, was it, yeah, Bournemouth Council, Bournemouth and Poole Council?
We've done this yesterday, BCP, okay. They're as
sorry,
bad
Bournemouth
as
and Christchurch
the,
and Paul.
Yeah, they're as bad as the government. They're giving you £100 means tested. Break the £100 down over a 2,000 litre tank or a 1,000 litre tank. That's still only bringing the unit of that literage down from 153-171 to 143-161.
And it's capped
rather
at that. That's all you.
It's a cap.
I just want to clarify. That's capped. You cannot get any more than that.
No, £100.
What do you think the government should be doing, lastly, Darren?
What they should be doing is coming in, because it's a utility, they should be setting a unit price, be it 53, be it 78, but setting a price so that the fuel companies can't just run away, you know, with these prices.
What are you going to do? How are you going to heat your home?
Luckily, we're coming into the summer.
But is it not how you heat your water? Do you not heat your water?
Yeah, so you heat your water. And do you know what the saddest thing is, right? There's a guy that I know, he's an old farmhand. Mm. He's probably about 68. He don't claim benefits. He just, you know, works on farms. Mm. He's actually switched his off. So he's going back to war times where he's boiling water.
Darren, look after yourself. Give my best wishes to that farmhand. That is unbelievably tough. 8:24. James in Seven Oaks. James, you use heating oil. Are you looking at similar increases? 153 to 171 or 61 to 145? What are you looking at? Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Nick. Yeah, absolutely. We've seen a huge increase, as everyone has, across the country. But there was 2 points. Like, we experienced, obviously, this huge price jump, and some people are price gouging, definitely. Mm, yeah. But we use like a caring fuel collective. It's always the cheapest way to buy the fuel through a collective. But they, because they don't hold stock, they can't supply people. So if anyone's holding stock, that's where they're price gouging. But the biggest price gouger is the civil service, because after yesterday's speech by Keir Starmer, I was so frustrated. When you've got a product that's 54% taxed, so all the other parts of that product, you know, we're taxed more than anyone else in the world for kerosene. Surely that individual who takes 54% of it, I know it's us, the country, but if they were just to move that tax gap by one or two percentages, that would help everybody. And when he said, we're going to help, you know, the most vulnerable, every kerosene user is vulnerable to this. And it's so frustrating, because if, like I do, and, you know, lots of us in the rural communities use heating oil, when caring fuel collectives don't offer stock because they don't hold it, we have to go to the individuals that do hold stock. They'll price gouge. But I feel like the biggest price gougers, you know, the civil service.
Yeah, 54%. Lastly, prior to this, was it economically an efficient way to heat your home?
Yeah, massively. Massive difference between electricity and gas. I mean, I know historically people used to avoid, you know, sort of kerosene boilers, but it was, for the last 10 years, it's been vastly cheaper than anything else. And I know some people obviously think of the environmental impact, but, you know, I was doing some research on it, and you know, 12 to 20% of kerosene is biofuel, has biofuel in it. So, you know, the industry is working quite hard, but we are one of the leading in, you know, countries with the ability to help in biofuel and making the products cleaner. But they're not helping that British company. We'd rather buy a product from a third party country that ships it around on diesel oil tankers. Yes. It's just lunacy.
James, stay in touch. These prices are huge, aren't they? Thank you. And 54% tax, that's worth remembering, actually, next time. I can underline that next time I speak with the government minister. Two other matters, although related, I say, and there are taxing times in Dubai. Not least as if you take a photograph to show that you and your family are okay if there's been another drone land, you could be arrested, as happened to three people yesterday. And now expats who want to come back have called on the government to clarify whether they will face large tax bills. Accountants advising some of the 160,000 British nationals who've registered their presence in the region have warned they could face an increased tax bill if the stay pushes them over the 183 days spent in the UK. Let's turn now to Sandra Jeevan, who's a partner and head of private client and trust at the accountancy firm UHY Hacker Young, and joins us now. I would imagine you or your colleagues probably act for some people in Dubai. What is the advice that you're providing at the moment? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for having me. Understandably, people are returning to the UK from the Gulf because of safety concerns. And importantly, safety must always come first. Tax is only one element, and people's safety and human connection are imperative. Our role as tax advisors is to help people understand the tax position calmly once they're safe, so they do not make knee-jerk reactions under pressure. That being said, UK tax exposure can arise far more quickly than people expect. And there's no one-size-fits-all answer. Each individual, each family has different circumstances, which is why early consideration and consultation is important. Ideally, that happens before returning to the UK, but even when someone has already come back, their position can often still be reviewed and in some cases mitigated.
I understand, and you'll be closer to this than I, there are currently government rules. So those who overstay this 183-day period, if there are, quote, exceptional circumstances or circumstances outside their control, they can have an extra time period. How long is that, and would conflict in the Middle East provide for that?
So, Nick, it's an interesting one. The way the legislation is drafted, war and related armed conflict are expressly recognized in the legislation as potential exceptional circumstances. Wow. However, days spent in the UK can only be disregarded where conflict gives rise to circumstances beyond individuals' control. So there is a misconception here. People often think exceptional circumstances will be accepted in situations where people choose to come to the UK, but it's more drafted in relation to people being prevented from leaving the UK. And documentation is key to demonstrate that the individual cannot leave the UK. So it's not where people choose to come to the UK, but leaving the UK. And 60 days is what's allowed at the moment.
Finally, people listening now trying to wrestle with this decision, what would your first piece, your prime piece of advice be, Sandra?
I think people should just step back, seek advice as soon as possible. Consultation is key. And it's always important, like I said in the past, it's a case by case. We have to take everything into consideration. Where we need to consider a third jurisdiction, that may even come into play. So it's not just whether you return to the UK or go back to Dubai. Let's talk about your personal circumstances and your family situation.
Grateful for your time, Sandra Jeevan. Thank you, partner and head of private client and trust at the accountancy firm UHY Hacker Young. We might take your calls on that. Certainly, Ralph, we're going to talk to you about the impact of heating oil. In other news, have you heard of something called the nation's shopping basket? Well, it's put together to try and give us a handle on exactly where we're going with inflation. What's gone out are things such as sheets of wrapping paper. What's come in are dash cams, pet grooming. Oh, and
greetings wherever, whenever. Carlsberg alcohol-free beer.
Carlsberg alcohol-free beer and hummus. Yes, in praise of hummus, as that now features in our shopping basket. More on that after this. 8.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
A government minister has told Nick that UK-US relations remain deep and important despite renewed criticism over the Iran war. President Trump says he's unhappy with Keir Starmer's refusal to help unblock the Strait of Hormuz. Health officials have confirmed a strain of meningitis B is among cases identified in Kent, where two people have died. Thousands of people are being tracked down for preventative antibiotics linked to a nightclub in Canterbury. And Scotland could become the first UK nation to legalise assisted dying. MSPs will have their final vote on the bill tonight and won't be bound by party lines. LBC weather, a cloudy start for many, some bright spells for England and Wales. Later, a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
You know what I love about Eurostar? The comfortable seats with lots of legroom. You know what I don't love? Playing hide and seek with my feet. Or playing footsies with my neighbour.
Ouch!
Sorry. Now that I'm on the Eurostar, the only game I'm playing is stretchy stretchy leg leg. And I always win. That's the ticket.
Eurostar. Together, we go further. Legroom varies by class of service.
Whether you're planning for your dream kitchen or that once-in-a-lifetime holiday,
With 3 weeks before the end of the tax year, JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you make the most of your tax-free allowances. Start making more informed investment decisions today with no management fees for your first 6 months. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing to learn more. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk. Tax rules vary by individual status and may change. T's and C's, exclusions and other charges apply. New clients only. Minimum investment of £500 by 5th of May. The
0817 leads is... Oh, mate. Whoa. Come on, Josh.
I'm right behind you. Whew.
Is smoking affecting your day-to-day? Every cigarette takes up to 20 minutes off your life. But fear not. The power to quit is in your hands. Introducing the free NHS Personal Quit Plan with a quit date planner and advice on managing your cravings. Search Smoke Free for your free plan and get the power today.
Day.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8.33, we'll talk more about heating, or Ralph, you'll be the next caller. But it is, of course, time, as we did in the first hour, to go back to the Nick Ferrari Fuel Trackers.
Nick Ferrari's Fuel Tracker on LBC.
Well, there we go with Gasolina by Daddy. I'd never even heard this music until a week or so ago. Daddy Yankee. Let's go first to Mohammed, who's in South Shields now, up in the northeast. When we first started our conversation, it had been at 131.9. Then it went up to 138.9. And that was for unleaded. For diesel, it was 133.9, up to 151.9. Mohammed in South Shields joins me now. Remind us for the prices you told us on Friday. Mohammed, good morning to you.
Hiya. I can't remember what the price was.
141.9 was unleaded. Yeah. 141.9 was unleaded. 160.9 was diesel. Where are we, Mohammed?
Okay, unleaded, 143.9.
Yep.
For unleaded. And diesel from this morning, sorry, is 164.9.
So we've got a rise of 2p on unleaded. We've got a rise of 4p on diesel. I've got to ask you before I let you go. You found a house? Yeah. Found a home yet, mate?
Both me by this afternoon, Nick. Both.
We'll talk at the end of the week. When I say he's homeless, he's not homeless. He's one of those people who, as people, landlords race to evict tenants. Poor old Mohammed is on the receiving end of that. Safe driving, sport. Thank you. Talk towards the end of the week. So that gives us the northeast. Lastly, let's go to the southwest. Mark in Plymouth to remind you. Prior to the problems, you had 133.9 and 140.9 for unleaded and diesel, respectively. Now it's 140.9, 153.9 when it started. Mark joins me now. Mark, can you remember the prices you told me? Don't worry if you can't. The prices you told me on Friday, or shall I remind you?
Oh, hi, Nick. Yeah, I've got them. Friday was 141.9 for unleaded petrol.
Yep.
And diesel was 156.9.
Where do we find ourselves this morning, young Mark?
Yeah, petrol is 142.9.
Oh, penny tick up, yep.
Yeah, and diesel is 158.9.
And a two-penny tick-up on that one. Safe driving, we'll probably talk at the end of the week. Thanks to my fuel trackers there. Rises across the board, across the whole of the country. The government, the Chancellor, saying she's going to crack down on those gougers. Well, we wait, and we wait. Let's talk about heating oil. Thank you for hanging. Ralph is in Framlingham. That's in Suffolk from memory, isn't it, Ralph? Good morning.
It certainly is. Yeah, yep. About 6 miles from Sizewell Power Station and 3 miles from Framlingham. So.
And you use heating oil because it's probably quite rural out there, I imagine.
Certainly is, and I was paying, I think I paid 53p at the end of January for a litre, and I was quoted via a collective that your last caller was referring to, 143 over the weekend.
Have they got stock? They got supplies?
They have got stock. Some of the consolidators that also sell around here are basically saying, we're just going to take your order, we'll tell you what the price is when we're ready to deliver, and you can either pay for it or you can go without. So it's not particularly helpful at the moment and very makes you feel very, very vulnerable.
Typically, how many litres would you buy in one go?
Well, I've been buying it this winter because it was coming down in price ever so slowly. I've been buying it in 500-litre batches, and right. I'm now out. So
I was going to say,
like one of your last callers, our house is at 11 degrees at the moment, and we are turning it on for a couple of hours a day. The Arga's off. So we're cooking on electric, and I'm beginning to think I'm going to start using the immersion heaters, use peak rate electricity to heat the hot water, because it will be marginally cheaper than oil at the moment.
Just you and a partner or a wife, or you've got children as well? What is it?
Well, I've got one daughter that's coming home from university this weekend.
She'll want showers and to wash her hair, mate, if she's like most girls of that age, I would suggest.
She certainly will. And yeah, she's not like us, take a quick dip in the shower. She wants to be in there for 25 minutes.
How are you going to cope, lastly?
Well, I mean, it's the thing that annoys me about this price cap thing or this assistance is that when the Tories did it during the Ukraine war, I just got a subsidy on my electricity bill. Like, I think I got £400 spread over 6 months. Mm. Whereas this time around, it's not universal at all. They're only giving it to what they define as vulnerable people, despite the fact that we're all vulnerable. I think it's going to be almost impossible to get. They've not published how the mechanics are going to work in any way, shape or form. And it's means tested. As several callers have said, the government is raking in huge amounts of extra revenue on it. And yet they're looking to give help to very, very few people indeed.
Stay in touch. Best wishes to your daughter. I bet you can't wait to get her home from university. But it is, I'm afraid it's going to put your heating bill up, Ralph, as I'm sure you're aware. Best wishes to you. Thanks for that. 8:38. Let's go to other matters. Have you heard of the nation's shopping basket? Well, it's a measure by which they can gauge where inflation is going. It's an annual update, and it's meant to give an insight into our shopping habits. Now, this year, statisticians have noticed that spending on healthier lifestyles and pets is popular. So the virtual basket, which has around 750 items, has changed quite a lot. Out has gone sheets of wrapping paper. They've been replaced by rolls of wrapping paper. When did anyone last buy a sheet of wrapping paper? Man, I'm nervous saying that word. I can't remember I've ever bought a sheet. You always buy a roll, don't you? Out goes bottled premium lager in restaurants. So what's come in? Dash cams. Have you got a dash cam? Pet grooming. Well, I haven't got a pet, so I'm not going to have pet grooming, am I? Alcohol-free beer and hummus. Yes, in praise of hummus. Matt McKenna is Head of Communications and Content Marketing at the comparison site Finder, specialising in personal finance and consumer affairs. We might have a word with him, actually, about oil. But let's talk first about the nation's shopping basket. How reflective or otherwise do you think this is in reality? Good morning to you.
Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
So it's generally led by data. So there are just the realities that people are buying more hummus at the end of the day.
We have to face the grim reality. We are buying a lot of hummus.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the way we're going. And, you know, Dry January is getting more popular than ever. So certainly alcohol-free lager is on the rise. So yeah, generally it does reflect what Brits are buying.
And dash cams, Matt. Are you wholly comfortable that people are splashing out on dash cams?
I mean, if you go on Twitter these days, it seems to be the case that everybody has a dash cam and, you know, everybody's filming each other. So, you know, again, I think that's the reality. And, of course, in the days of, you know, such strict insurance and things like that, you know, it's probably wise for people to have a dash cam at the end of the day.
Croissants. I'm not being rude, but croissants have also entered the shopping basket. Again, are you in accord with that? Do you find yourself, your partner, your wife, whatever it might be, buying more croissants?
I'd probably put it in the treat category, to be honest, but I have no qualms with it being in the list.
Let's talk a little bit about what Finder does. Can they help with oil prices? Can they help with heating oil prices, Matt?
Well, specifically, we don't cover that, but, you know, our role is to try and cover full market views for things like banking, insurance, investing, products like that, and just try and help people, you know, find the best deals and not get stung.
All right. If I can get a little bit personal with you, do you have a dash cam?
I don't. I live in London at the moment, and I can't face driving here. So if I lived up north still, I would.
Do you have a pet that you regularly groom?
Again, no pet. I blame the London living.
It's all going to hinge on this, Matt. I'm ahead of you. Don't worry. One of my colleagues in my ear. Right. Have you got a tub of hummus in your fridge?
You know what? Let me check. I don't.
Why the hell have we got Matt on? He hasn't got a pet, he doesn't have a dash cam, and he hasn't got any hummus in the fridge, Matt.
But thanks. I do have olives, Nick. We'll see if they make the list.
And you haven't got a croissant to your name at the moment, have you?
I actually do have a croissant, so I'm not a total fraud.
Thanks for being such a good sport. Matt McKenna, Head of Communications and Content Marketing at Finder, specialising in personal finance and consumer affairs, clearly a bloke with a sense of humour. Question, have you got, of those three, let's restrict the croissants, let's lose that. Have you got a dash cam? Nope. Have you got a pet? Do you go pet groom? Well, I've got a pet, so that'd be really bizarre. Have I got hummus in the fridge? I'm going to say, oh, no, she bought it. No, well, I had to buy it for it. Yeah, I have. Yeah, I bought hummus on the weekend. Not for me, for
my current wife. Right, so go to your fridge, open the door, see if you've got... Oh, she does love a bit of hummus, I'm not going to lie. Invented, by the way, as the Times tell us, invented in, here we go, 1980s, Waitrose became the first British supermarket to stock hummus. In the 90s, the popularity exploded thanks to celebrity chefs such as Yotam Ottolenghi. She's got all his books. His ultimate recipe demands dried chickpeas soaked overnight in a mixture of water and bicarbonate of soda along with the requisite garlic, tahini and olive oil. Hummus's popularity... Oh, here we go. I was onto something here. 41% of us have a tub of hummus in the fridge right now. Have you got hummus in your fridge? I'm just looking at my... Have you got hummus in... No. Have you got hummus in your fridge? No. Have you... So one out of three. That's almost 41%. We'll take that. One out of three has got hummus in the fridge. How much do you suppose we spend on hummus on last year? How much did this country spend on hummus? I'll tell you in a moment. It's 8:43. Ben's in Nantwich. We're talking heating oil. How much have you spent on heating oil? Good morning.
Hello. How are you?
I'm all right. How much have you had to spend?
Well, actually, I bought my last delivery about 2 weeks ago, and it cost me £520, 800 litres.
800 litres, well, you wouldn't get that now, I'm afraid, sport, would you?
No, and I actually looked just about 2 days ago on a price finder near me, and a quote was in the region of about £1,600.
How long will 800 litres last for you?
That'll probably last, if 800 litres would last the 6 months of the winter season, let's say, over the coldest period.
Now, obviously, I assume it heats your water as well, does it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we're coming, please God, into warm... Well, we have to be coming into warmer times than the winter. So spring is, I think, next week or this week. I will look that up.
Yes.
Do you reckon you can get... how long do you reckon you can eat this out? Can you get to the winter, effectively?
Now I'll definitely get through to the winter, yeah. And as I said in one of the texts, is that I've turned the hot water off completely, but I'll heat it with the immersion heater,
which
has been, in the past, inefficient. But if you put it on for an hour a day, you know, it's probably 2 kilowatts. It won't...
Won't break the bank. And lastly, if you don't mind asking, do you live alone? Have you got a partner, a wife, children? What's the story?
I just live with my wife, yeah.
Just your wife, okay. So, unfortunately, there's no daughters or stepdaughters who need showers that seem to go on for until the end of time. Ben, good luck trying to get a good price. Thank you for that. Let's talk shopping baskets. Dave's in Hounslow. I want to ask you a series of questions. Dave, do you have a dash cam?
Yes, I do. Good morning, Nick. Yes, I do.
Good morning, sir. Do you have a dash cam? Okay. Do you have a pet?
No.
Ah, right. Here's the killer. Do you have a tub of hummus in your fridge?
No.
So how reflective is all this in your view? Do you buy low-alcohol, non-alcohol beer?
I buy alcohol and non-alcohol.
If you had to wrap a present for your mum, if she's still with us, on Mothering Sunday, would you have bought a sheet of wrapping paper or a roll of wrapping paper?
Rolls.
So you're pretty much in accord, aren't you, when you think about it, Dave?
Yeah.
Are you happy with that shopping basket? It's reflective of what you buy, Dave.
No one's ever happy when I keep putting prices up, are they?
You got that right, Dave. Thank you. So how much does this country spend on hummus each year? The figure is extraordinary. And I'll tell you after the news, when we'll also tell you...
The life savings of a dog-breeding couple in South Wales have been wiped after the local authority used a law that's usually reserved for drug dealers to prosecute them. I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the story.
8:45 now, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, a government minister has dismissed suggestions UK-US relations have been damaged after President Trump renewed his criticism to the response over the Iran war. Health officials have confirmed a strain of meningitis B is among cases identified in Kent, where two people have died. And Scotland could become the first nation in the UK to legalise assisted dying. LBC weather, a cloudy start for many, some bright spells for England and Wales. Later, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. On the M25 anti-clockwise, through Keys from Junction 18 for Chorley Wood to just after Junction 17 for Maple Cross after a car broke down earlier. The A20 Swanley Bypass is blocked going out of town at the M25 roundabout because of an accident, so there are queues. On the A2 going into town, it's taking about 35 minutes to go from the Danson interchange to the Kidbrook interchange. There are queues in Mayfair. Barclay Street southbound is blocked. A bus has broken down between Mayfair Place and Piccadilly. On the trains, there are delays of up to half an hour and cancellations between King's Cross and Stevenage. That's after there was an investigation earlier, so that's affecting services on the East Coast Main Line, including LNER, Thames Link and Great Northern, and on the Tube there are minor delays on the Victoria Line because of cancellations.
LBC.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales
and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
A spectacle far beyond your imagination. Be amazed. Be moved. Be there. For an experience that will stay with you forever. Disney's The Lion King at London's Lyceum Theatre. Book now at thelionking.co.uk.
Irrational is a printer that's next to your laptop, but somehow offline. Smart is a printer with self-healing Wi-Fi that helps keep you connected. Stressful is your printer choosing check-in day to check out of ink. Smart is an HP smart tank with 3 years of cartridge-free ink. Oh, that's smart. So go on, search HP smart tank. Find the last printer you'll ever need.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club car prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Well, here's the figure for you. This is how much we spent on hummus in 2024. The figure's not yet in for 2025, but we are working hard at it. The nation loves hummus. £170 million was spent on hummus. Now, to put that in proportion, you know we're all going mad about dash cams, or they are. That's only worth £150 million. Consider how expensive a dash cam is compared to a tub of hummus. People have gone nuts for hummus. We might have more about that. But in a related story, I suppose, we're off to a Turkish restaurant. You may recall back in October, LBC revealed the owners of a family-run Turkish restaurant in Lewisham, it's the Metze Mangal, were facing a bill of £2.5 million after installing an extractor fan, which, unfortunately, deemed local authority guidance. Now, the local authority involved, Lewisham Borough Council, were using a law reserved for serious criminal activity, such as drug dealing. It's called the Proceeds of Crime Act, to go after the two brothers who own the restaurant. And now LBC has learnt of another instance where dog breeders in South Wales have lost their life savings after being pursued under the same act. Henry Riley has the story and joins me now in the LBC studio. Henry, morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, serious concerns now about how this piece of law, the Proceeds of Crime Act, is being deployed by local authorities to prosecute local businesses. Now, as you mentioned, it was in October we spoke with Ahmed and Sahin Gok, who are the brothers who own this Turkish family restaurant, Meze Mangal, in Lewisham. They're facing a confiscation order, potentially, we learn, of over £3 million after installing an extractor fan without planning permission. And at the time, I spoke with one of the brothers, Sahin.
We feel like a criminal, treating us like a criminal. It does affect a lot, and it affects our business as well, because we can't really concentrate on the business. It took so much from my life.
Does it hurt?
A lot. A lot.
At the time, we were reporting a figure of £2.5 million. It looks like, as I mentioned, that's now up to £3.1 million plus costs. Of course, they are appealing, and we'll find out in the next couple of months how that goes. And, Nick, you mentioned there's... we've now got another case that we've learnt of a devastated dog-breeding couple from Carmarthenshire who've told us that their life savings have been wiped out after the local council used these same laws. Now, for over 40 years, Mike and Pauline Watts have been breeding Dobermans in South Wales. Many of their pedigree puppies have actually actually appeared at Crufts. So they're clearly very successful. And Mike told us what happened.
I was so ill. Pauline was so ill. She's still waiting for a hip operation. I said, how much do we owe you? 196,000. And then when I came home, yeah, to be honest with you, Conrad, we cried. It is a lot of money. My life savings, to be honest with you.
And they paid it. Nearly £200,000. Carmarthenshire County Council pursued the couple for failing to hold the required specific breeding licence for the dog, arguing that because they did not hold that relevant licence, all cash made from sales of puppies over a six-year period was gained illicitly. So they assumed the local authority each puppy was sold at the advertised price of £3,000, rather than, in some cases, it was sold for lower than that. Accumulated all of that together and £200,000. They also included puppies that were not sold because they died in infancy. Pauline gave us her reaction.
They said, it doesn't matter if the puppies have died or if you have gifted them, you've still gained by them. How on earth do you gain from dead puppies?
Now, these laws, as you mentioned, usually reserved for gang leaders, drug kingpins, international fraud networks. The couple were prosecuted under this Proceeds of Crime Act, a law introduced in 2002 that's meant to recoup money generated through serious criminal activities. And Nick, there's now a wider spotlight on that piece of legislation. We've been speaking with experts who say it's now being used in much less serious cases. Mark Clifton is from the forensic accountants Frenkels.
Phrase I call it, it's a cash piñata. It's a way of generating income. It's an easy way of successfully prosecuting somebody. And because there's a very low bar under the Proceeds of Crime Act, i.e. a crime has to be worth more than £5,000, which is a low bar, because £5,000 is a threshold, it doesn't take a lot for a regulatory breach.
Now, the allegation is that local authorities with these pieces of legislation that get a third of the funds recouped under the Act. The burden of proof is on the individuals, meaning that they must prove documentation over the past 6 years, some of which they haven't kept. Let me tell you what the local council say. Carmarthenshire wouldn't comment directly on the case, but they told us that the use of that piece of legislation is guided by the principle that crime should not be financially advantageous. They use it proportionally, not punitively. And a spokesperson for the Ministry of Housing, Community and local government said the Act is still an important tool for councils to take enforcement action.
So just to clarify, legislation that was brought in to try and crack down on drug dealing, international fraud, the bar is £5,000.
It's very low, and that hasn't changed in the however many years since it was brought in 2002.
So whether you're a puppy breeder or a restaurateur, it's £5,000, someone wants to give that to me this afternoon, thank you. But it's not a lot in running a business.
Not at all. And, I mean, you heard the case of Mike and Pauline there. This is their life savings, yes. £200,000. You've now got this case with the Gock brothers in
now,
Lewisham.
What's the latest? Is that going to court?
That is, yeah, that's still currently before a dispute through the court, so we don't know the exact amount that will turn out to be at the moment, but as I mentioned, the estimated figure they're working to is potentially over £3 million.
If your business is affected in this fashion by this legislation that clearly A is out of date with 5,000, B is questionable in the way that it's been framed anyway, do let us know and we'll pick up on other businesses. Henry Riley filed that report, 8:55 is the time. Let's talk about heating. I would just want to thank you. Where's this? Thank you, Stephen in Chelsea, who's reporting that petrol, well, I'm assuming it's unleaded, it might be diesel, you don't say, on Sloane Avenue, which is a very ritzy part of town, £2.53.9 a litre. £2.53.9. Dear, I mean, that's more than a pound a litre, if it's unleaded, that I saw this morning driving past Sainsbury's. Heating oil with Mark in Reading. Mark, do you rely on it? Good morning.
Yeah, I do, Nick. Yeah.
Well, tell us about how much you... So have you had to fork out a lot of money for supplies? How much oil have you got?
No, at the moment, I've stopped buying it. At the moment, I'm just relying on my wood burner.
Is that legal to have a wood burner? I can't remember whether they're legal or not.
Yeah, they're legal at the moment. I mean, how long for? I don't know, but I'm sure they'll come. They'll come for us one day.
Do you heat your water off your log burning stove?
Yeah, do on a back boiler.
Okay, so you can survive off that then.
I can, but what I phoned in for, Nick, was the fact that I've been hearing a lot of your guys or people calling in saying that, you know, obviously the price of oil has gone up and
it's,
you know, it's bad. And the one thing they're doing is turning their hot water off and using an immersion to save oil. Well, it's the wrong way around. You actually use less oil when you heat your hot water than you do for your heating. It's the heating that actually eats your oil.
How do you know this?
Because I'm a boiler. Oh. I'm an oil boiler engineer. I used to do it for a living.
Right.
So what I'm saying is that your hot water only uses 3 kilowatt.
yeah,
right, of power. So that means that your boiler's not eating that much oil. It's on the heating that they're doing that. So when they go over to an immersion, even though the immersion on kilowatt per price per hour or per whatever it is unit is cheaper at the moment, it's still cheaper to heat the hot water up through the oil.
Right, and you're speaking as a professional in the field then. We can take that advice.
Yeah. I mean, all they need to do really is turn their heating down to 17 to 18 degrees and let it tick rather than boosting it up to 20, 25, getting it hot and then going off on a timer.
Got it. Funnily enough, exactly speaking of what I've been doing. Mark, I think you're in a vehicle. Safe driving. Thanks for your input on both fields, both the heating oil and how to try and ensure that you can get the maximum of economic return. Let's finish. We're talking about economics, the shopping basket conversation. Ruth's in Bury St Edmunds. Do you have a dash cam?
No, I don't, because I don't have a car. But I do have a very expensive dog that costs me around £810 a year to groom.
What sort of dog is it?
It's a standard poodle, and it costs around £81 every 5 to 6 weeks to get him groomed.
And this is obviously clipping him and everything else.
That's wash, cut, blow, dry.
Wash, cut, blow, and sorry, so that's £81. I think that's more than most people spend on their hair.
Yeah, I know, it's more than I spend on my hair. I only go 4 times a year. I haven't been for 6 months, so he gets his hair done rather than I do.
What's your poodle's name?
Marley. I used to have two of them at the same time, so it used to be double bubble, but I've only got the one now.
I'm so sorry. You must love Marley.
I do. I love him very much, which is wrong.
Is he the most? Is Marley the most elegant poodle in Bury St Edmunds?
He is. He's
what happens?
Pooch.
What happens if you don't groom? Does his coat get all dirty? I mean, what?
Yeah,
I've never
kept
a poodle.
Yeah, very matted, and my husband doesn't like the smell, so he goes a bit nuts.
Oh, I see. So you have to get Marley done. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Final question. If you were to go to your fridge, do you have?
I do not have hummus.
It's like a password. I do not have hummus. Best wishes to Marley. Thank you. £810 per annum to keep Marley. He must be the smartest poodle in the whole of Suffolk. Music means we move on. Coming up after the news, we're to Scotland.
A momentous day in the Scottish Parliament as MSPs literally grapple with matters of life and death. I'm Gina Davidson and I'll bring you the latest on the progress of the assisted dying bill.
Plus another impact of COVID, the car park giant NCP on the verge of collapse. So exactly where are you parking your cars? Are you not bringing them in to major cities and towns? Of course, you've also, in some instances, you've got that congestion charge to pay. And of course, we'll go back to the bigger story, focus on the Middle East. Donald Trump's assertion that we, the United Kingdom, are no longer a Rolls-Royce of allies. We'll return to that. Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, a government minister has moved to play down President Trump's latest criticism of the UK in its response to the Iran war. Donald Trump wants allies to help America unblock the Strait of Hormuz, a key route for transporting oil. Mr. Trump says he once saw the UK as the Rolls-Royce of allies, but is disappointed by the reluctance to get more involved. Speaking to Nick, the Treasury Minister Dan Tomlinson said from time to time, leaders come to different judgments.
Underneath the froth and the words that are said, we have a long and abiding and a really deep and important relationship with our allies in the United States.
He doesn't see it that way, though, Mr. Tomlinson, currently.
I don't know about that. Right now, UK military bases are being used by the Americans to support the efforts to get rid of the missiles that could have an impact on British nationals or any innocent civilian.
It's been confirmed a strain of meningitis B is among cases identified in Kent, where 2 people have died. Thousands of people are being tracked down for preventative antibiotics linked to a nightclub in Canterbury. Anyone who went to Club Chemistry on the 5th, 6th or 7th of March has been told to contact health officials. Professor Andrew Lee is from the University of Sheffield School of Medicine.
For most of the public, actually, the risk is minimal. The authorities will be trying to identify those at highest risk of coming to contact with a germ or passing it on. And those people would be the ones being invited to come forward for antibiotics.
Ukraine's leader Volodymyr Zelensky is due to meet Sir Keir Starmer in Downing Street as Britain and Ukraine sign a new defence deal. Number 10 says it'll bring together expertise to manufacture and supply drones. £500,000 will go towards a new AI centre in Kyiv.
Scotland could become the first UK nation to legalise assisted dying later. MSPs will have their final vote on the bill tonight and won't be bound by party lines. And around 600 jobs are to be cut at the banking group Close Brothers in the UK and Ireland. The company says the move, affecting nearly a quarter of its workforce, will take place over the next 18 months. The firm is trying to recoup car finance compensation costs paid out to customers. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading at 15 at 10,333. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, a cloudy morning for many, some bright spells for England and Wales by the afternoon. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
And now your travel news. It's starting to look a bit congested on the A4870 southbound. We're hearing reports people are slowing down to look at the Volkswagen Transporter sales event. Apparently you can get £1,500 off any new Transporter. That's any variant, any trim, and any colour until the 31st of March. Now that's a deal worth queuing for. Search VW Transporter offers. UK retail customers, 18 plus. Discount applies to price of all new Transporters ordered by 31st of March and delivered by 30th of June.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after nine, Tuesday, March the 17th. Coming up in this hour, MSPs to vote on assisted dying bill for terminally ill adults in Scotland. Major indications to how the whole of the nation could go, and we'll give you full details on that. Plus, back to the world of business. How come NCP, the car parking giant, collapses? Why is it that you're no longer bringing your car into cities or towns? Is it because of congestion charge? Is it because you're actually working from home? It was once an absolute gangbuster business, so what's gone wrong there? And what's gone wrong in the supposed special relationship? Well, in the view of President Trump,
the UK, which we sort of considered the Rolls-Royce of allies, right? And I say it would be really helpful if you'd send over a couple of ships. So it was very disappointing.
And then the suggestion that Keir Starmer said he did want to send ships, which would be practically impossible because one of them is not good to go, physically can't move, and the other is set for the Arctic. So it's the engines, for want of a really crude expression, are not set for the right temperature water, so there's no truth to that. But as Britain is not alone, or the United Kingdom, along with France and Germany, is that the position to take with an increasingly isolated United States?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
But first, to the deeply sensitive issue of the idea of assisted dying for terminally ill. Now, we have charted the progress, or lack, some would say, of it here in England, but there could be a major step forward in Scotland as regards the whole of the United Kingdom. And here with the background, the details, and why it is so key today, LBC Scotland political editor Gina Davison. Gina, morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, a really momentous day in Holyrood. MSPs grappling with that matter of life and death in this assisted dying bill. It is perhaps the most consequential piece of legislation that the Holyrood Parliament has ever actually had to deal with. And if MSPs vote for it, I think it's not overstating things to say it will fundamentally change Scotland and potentially the rest of the UK. So the debate has been intense and hugely emotional. MSPs' inboxes full of pleadings for and against, and the weight of the enormity of this has clearly been heavy on the MSP's shoulders. We saw that last week when over 300 amendments were debated. And one of those who has written asking for MSPs to pass this bill is Edinburgh mum Lisa Fleming, who has a terminal cancer diagnosis. This is what she had to say.
When you have a diagnosis such as I do of cancer, it strips away so much of your dignity, and to be able to know that I have that choice at the end, and you know, we're talking about when there's nothing more that can be done, that's something that I feel is really important.
Now, she's campaigned alongside the MSP who brought this bill forward. That's Scottish Liberal Democrat Liam MacArthur, who says that the current situation is just untenable for terminally ill people.
From the conversations I've had with MSP colleagues across the parties over the last 4 or 5 years, I believe there is a strong majority of support for a change in the law, a recognition that the current ban on assisted dying is untenable, leaving too many dying Scots with a series of intolerable decisions at the end of life.
Now, he says that the amendments that were passed last week have made this piece of legislation bulletproof, the safest of its kind in the world. But it is fair to say that MSPs who were initially supportive have been changing their minds. And the result is now incredibly finely balanced. And it could pass or fall by just a couple of votes either way. Scottish Labour MSP Paul O'Kane is one person who has huge concerns with this piece of legislation.
Look, my position has always been that I would listen to the debate and enter into the process in good faith. However, I think what's transpired over the number of days that we've considered amendments are that the safeguards that I would expect to see are not there. There are still holes in this bill. There are still too many unanswered questions about coercion, about the rights of disabled people, about cross-border issues, you know, a whole myriad of things, which lead me to the place that this bill is not a good bill.
Now, he believes that there will be a legal challenge to this legislation no matter what happens tonight. It's also worth mentioning that while this is a conscience vote, Nick, and the Scottish Government has taken no side, last night it put out a commentary saying that the costs associated with delivery of this bill are likely to be high and will require a degree of reprioritisation. That is code, of course, as we know, for cuts somewhere else, and that is probably in the health budget. And that may swing some MSPs who are still undecided. We get the debate around 7 o'clock tonight, and again the vote will come just after 10 o'clock, and we will know whether or not MSPs have voted for or against assisted dying.
Gina, just before I let you go, how, if at all, does the legislation proposed in Scotland differ from that down here in England?
Well, it's actually, after those amendments, Nick, it's actually much more similar to the legislation that was being looked at in Westminster previously. It didn't have any kind of time limits in this piece of legislation. Now, amendments were passed to say you had to at least have a six-month terminal diagnosis, and they put that time limit into this piece of legislation. So it is closer to what was trying to be passed in Westminster. But the other interesting thing about this is that some of the things that are in this bill need to be agreed at Westminster too, because they are reserved issues around employment when it comes to the medical professionals, and around even the very drugs that would be given to somebody who wanted to end their own life, because that is reserved through the Poisons Act. So there's still a long way to go with this bill if it does pass tonight, and campaigners are already saying it might take at least 2 years before it comes into effect.
Gina Davison, LBC Scotland political editor, reporting. Let's turn to Peter Warren, who's trustee at the Scottish charity Friends at the End, campaigning to change the law. How would you call tonight's vote? Mr. Warren, good morning.
Nick, good morning. I think it would be absolutely fair to say it's on a knife edge. The first vote, it was 70 in favour and 56 against. But clearly, a lot of discussions happened since then, and some MSPs have really been reconsidering their vote, which is fair enough, because it is such an important issue. But we really hope that the campaign that we have conducted and the conversations we've had will be enough to keep it as a yes vote come 10 o'clock this evening.
Share some of those conversations you and your colleagues have been having. What are the points you've been making, Mr. Warren?
Well, some of the things that people have been talking about have just been mentioned. For example, it's been suggested that the bill isn't competent. Well, the nature of devolution is that there are some issues that we can deal with in Scotland and some that have to be dealt with in Westminster. So that's absolutely just part and parcel of the devolution settlement. And we call them Section 104s. That deals with matters of conscience and the drugs. The UK Parliament has already said, the government's already said, that they will not stand in the way of a Scottish bill if it passes. And they will make sure that anything that needs to happen from the UK government will pass. So, I mean, for example, that was something that was being used quite extensively by opponents to the bill, and we can demonstrate quite clearly that that's really not an issue. So it's those kind of things, those kind of conversations where we've had to reassure supportive MSPs that, you know, they can continue to support a bill that actually, it's about compassion. It's about giving people choice, and nothing more than that. That's what we would continue to say.
This is a very contentious issue, as I'm sure you're aware, Mr. Warren. What persuades you and your colleagues that you're on the right side, that you're on the right side of the argument, Mr. Warren?
Well, I've been involved with this one way or the other for more than 20 years. I worked for a politician in the Scottish Parliament way back from 2005. The people who phoned us then, and the people who phone our charity now, they continue to have the same fears about not having a law in place. So, you know, I had a conversation recently with a woman whose sister had to choose to stop eating and drinking in order that she could die in a hospice in Scotland. I had to deal with a wife whose husband hung himself. I mean, these are really horrible, terrible situations that people find themselves in. And if this bill doesn't pass, those conversations and those phone calls and contacts are going to keep coming to us. You know, we need to hope that the MSPs are brave enough to go ahead and actually change this law today. I mean, that's all we can say.
How much of a concern is it that if Scotland does go ahead with tonight's vote, that people might try and travel from England, if we do not get legislation in Westminster, from England to try and end their lives in Scotland?
Well, part of the legislation makes it absolutely, proposed legislation makes it absolutely clear that you actually have to have a residency commitment to Scotland. If I remember correctly, I think you have to be registered with a GP here for a minimum of 12 months. So this notion that there would be some kind of tourism associated with the dying just isn't going to be, it just isn't going to be a reality. And I'm sorry for people in England if that's the case.
Yes. No, well, you can only work on what you can work on, let's be honest about it. And lastly, to those who say that you and your colleagues, you're looking at the wrong side of the argument, there should be better provision of hospice care, end-of-life care, that is what should be being provided rather than an ability to end your life. How would you, and I'm sure you've heard those arguments many times, Mr. Warren, how do you respond?
I have heard those endless number of times, and you know, that conversation has gone on amongst MSPs for more than a decade. But what I would say is that I think in the last couple of years, I'll be correct if I'm wrong, something like £73 million extra has been fed into palliative care services in Scotland. It's not about palliative care or choice to have an assisted death. We want to see both. We want to see the best palliative care, but also we want to give people the choice, and that's what it comes down to.
Grateful for your time. Thank you, Peter Warren, your trustee at the Scottish charity Friends at the End, campaigning for that change. And of course, it is at the end of today that that vote will take place, probably somewhere in the region of about 10 o'clock tonight. And you'll hear the result here on LBC. And of course, the joy of this station is you'll then be able to contribute to a conversation. Now, it needed 175 amendments in the last week alone to get the bill in Scotland where it currently sits. 170. This shows the level, just how contentious it is. And of course, it's fair to say if Scotland goes that way, there will be additional pressure here in England. And which way might that go? As it is reported that it is pretty much set, I would argue, to be stalled here in Westminster. It is a tough one, and we'll take your views on that. Now, equally tough is the position in which the UK, and not alone, by the way, France and Germany and other European countries, as President Trump demands more help from his supposed allies.
The Prime Minister is a nice man. I think he's a very nice guy. He says, well, I'd like to ask my team. I said, you don't have to worry about a team. You don't have a team. You're the Prime Minister. You can make a decision.
There you go, freewheeling President Trump again. And while you can question whether there should have been more support offered to President Trump right at the outset to protect British military assets, now is there an economic argument to in some way contribute to opening the Strait of Hormuz? Militarily, maybe not so much, as no one seems to know the end game, but economically, we'll come back to that as well. It's 9:15, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, a government minister has dismissed suggestions UK-US relations have been damaged after President Trump renewed his criticism to the response over the Iran war. Health officials have confirmed a strain of meningitis B is among cases identified in Kent, where two people have died. And Scotland could become the first nation in the UK to legalise assisted dying. LBC weather, a cloudy start for many, some bright spells for England and Wales. Later, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The Archies on the M25 anti-clockwise after a car broke down earlier between Junction 17 for Maple Cross and Junction 16 for the M40. The A20 Swanley Bypass eastbound stays blocked at the M25 because of an accident, so the Archies. In East Dulwich, Lordship Lane northbound is closed between East Dulwich Grove and the Goose Green roundabout because of a gas leak. There are long delays in Bermondsey on Tower Bridge Road in both directions to Caledonian Market. That's because of the roadworks. On the trains, there are delays of up to half an hour and cancellations between King's Cross and Stevenage after an investigation earlier. That's affecting services on the East Coast main line, including LNER, Thameslink and Great Northern. And on the Tube, there are minor delays on the entire Victoria line because of some cancellations.
This is LBC.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia, and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
The new single drops. The world tour begins. As artists create the music we love, you could be right there in the mix. Calling all young creatives. If you want a career in music, then listen up. Global Academy have a new 6-4 music production course. State-of-the-art studios, practical experience, hands-on learning with music professionals. Awesome! Apply now at globalacademy.com.
At AJ Bell, we believe every customer deserves brilliant service, which is just one reason we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. And we all trust pilots, with their smooth, captainy voices that make you feel like you'd let them land anywhere they like. Sorry, where was I? Right, AJ Bell, rated excellent by sexy pilots. I mean Trustpilot. I'm a flight risk. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
A very lengthy and moving emails and texts coming in concerning this vote in Scotland. I don't think it's appropriate. I try and sub them down, so might turn some of those into some of the calls. But the other, and while that is a huge issue, of course, in Scotland and in its way for the whole of the United Kingdom globally, all eyes are still on the Middle East. Now, at a press conference yesterday afternoon, President Trump launched into criticism targeting the United Kingdom and Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer.
I was very surprised with the United Kingdom, because the United Kingdom, 2 weeks ago, I said, why don't you send some ships over? And he really didn't want to do it. I said, you don't want to do it. We've been with you. You're our oldest ally. And we spend a lot of money on, you know, NATO and all of these things to protect you. I mean, we're protecting them. We're working with them on Ukraine. Ukraine's thousands of miles away, separated by a vast ocean. We don't have to do that, but we did it. Well, Biden did it. I mean, I have to be honest with you. Biden got taken to the cleaners. But we worked with them in Ukraine. We don't need to work with them in Ukraine. And then they tell us that we have a mine ship around and they don't want to do it. I think it's terrible. No, I was very surprised. I told him, you know, we requested 2 aircraft carriers, which they had, and he didn't really want to do it. And then right after the war essentially ended, you know, meaning they were obliterated, he said, I would like to send the aircraft carriers. I said, I don't need them after the war has ended and won. I need it before the war. So I was very upset with, not upset, I was not happy with the UK. I think they'll be involved, yeah, maybe. But they should be involved enthusiastically. We've been protecting these countries for years with NATO.
Now, this has caused a degree of confusion, if not consternation, within Westminster and Whitehall, because the two aircraft carriers are not able to go. One is functioning, but is set for routine patrols and exercises in the Arctic. So that means the settings are obviously to cope with that kind of water. The other is not seaworthy currently. It is not able to put to sea. So there's no way the Prime Minister could have said, we're happy to send you two. He physically wouldn't have been able to do that. But as is often the case with President Trump, there was no sort of holding back. Indeed, there was more doubling down later in the Oval Office.
The UK, which we sort of considered the Rolls-Royce of allies, right? Wouldn't you say? They were the oldest, and they were going to be there. And I say, it would be really helpful if you'd send over a couple of ships, and if you have some minesweepers, which they do, be very helpful. And the prime minister is a nice man. I think he's a very nice guy. He says, well, I'd like to ask my team. I said, you don't have to worry about a team. You don't have a team. You're the prime minister. You can make a decision. Well, I have to speak to my people. I said, you don't have to speak to anybody. So it was very disappointing. And then after we obliterated them and destroyed their military, the whole thing, and it became a much safer zone, he said, we're going to send over two aircraft carriers. I said, I don't want them anymore. I don't want them after we win. I want them before we start. I don't need your aircraft carriers after we've already won. So, you know, those things are very disappointing.
So I put some of these comments in the first hour of the show with the Exchequer Secretary to the Treasury, Dan Tomlinson. What did he make of President Trump's view?
Well, look, different people, particularly the president, will express their views and opinions, and of course they're very welcome and entitled to them. Underneath it all, underneath the froth and the words that are said from day to day, we have a long and abiding and a really deep and important relationship with our allies in the United States.
He doesn't see it that way, though, Mr. Thomas, currently.
Well, I don't know about that. Right now, UK military bases are being used by the Americans to support the efforts to get rid of the missiles that could have an impact on British nationals or any innocent civilian who's living or working in the Middle East. And we are working closely with them. As I say, we do have a really deep security partnership with them. And from time to time, presidents and prime ministers will come to different judgments. I'm really confident, and I do think it's a mainstream view across the public, that the prime minister has taken the right decision when it comes to not having us trying to engage with what I think at one point was termed regime change from the sky in Iran. Yes, you know, we don't support the Iranian regime and the IRGC and the terror that they inflict on their people and on the region, but we do want to make sure that we are protecting British national interests, not least because of the impact of what's happening in the Middle East on our shores.
Now, a very powerful piece in one of the newspapers this morning, The Times, sets out some home truths, and while a lot of people think that the Prime Minister was right not to offer support, I think at the start, the idea that British, as I said before, the British military bases or where military personnel were serving and British citizens were involved, then there was protection of the country, protection of the country's citizens, but not going hand in hand with Donald Trump. But he faces an even more difficult one in a sense now, because as The Times says out, the Sir Keir has to face one simple truth. Protecting vital sea lanes is an essential national interest for a major trading power such as the island of the United Kingdom. Protecting freedom of navigation in the Strait, avenue for a fifth of the world's oil and gas, is a clear priority, and it's a challenge. One of Britain's skills is mine clearance, but the personnel conducting these delicate operations need protection. The Prime Minister ducks this because he doesn't want to focus on the dilapidated state of the Royal Navy, is in the view of The Times, which goes on to say, Sir Keir may not want to join Trump's war, but the conflict demands a British response. When the dust settles, the Gulf states will remember who it was who stood by their side. There is a strong history of diplomatic, military and commercial ties between Britain and the Gulf states. So, militarily, of course, no sane person wants to see British boots on the ground going into Tehran or any other parts of Iran. Of course they don't, or even Lebanon, for that matter. But there is a commercial priority, particularly for an island such as the United Kingdom. So, with that raft of decisions, what did you make of it? Well, this is some of your contributions in the first hour.
It'd be great if this regime was overthrown. Trump started this war without any consultation with the allies, no plan, and he expects us to jump when he says. He wants to put our ships in the firing line. He should have thought of this before he started the war.
Chris is in the world.
There's a couple of things that I find quite ironic and quite contradictory. First of all, he always mentions he's got the most powerful military in the world, but then he's complaining about our Prime Minister not making any decisions. But then, of course, if you've got the most powerful military in the world, and you know, including Marines, etc., why do you need our minesweepers?
Alan in Stavanger.
America has started this war. Now, many of your listeners are thinking it's avoidable, possibly illegal, but equally, America are our allies. We need to support them. We have interests. So what we do is we offer to provide our ships to replace American ships in other parts of the world, to free up more American ships to sort their war out. We're helping them, we're being the ally, and we're helping America.
Those are the calls. Starting with Tony, I should have name-checked Tony there. Let's get to Joe now in North Ayrshire. Joe, what would you say to the commercial aspect of this now? Good morning.
Oh, well, the commercial, well, I think for starters, Rachel Maddow, who is one of the US the journalists out there, she's saying that we need to be looking into Jared Kushner, because Jared Kushner is asking Saudi Arabia...
No, hold on. I'm asking, interesting as that might be, I'm asking if we accept... Britain has to make a decision now, in part because of its commercial interest. Does that mean they should offer support to Donald Trump? That's the question.
I don't think so because I think how this will play out. If we go in and I obviously it's got to be sorted out somehow. But if we go in and help Donald Trump and clear up his mess, this is his mess. It's his illegal war. If we go in and help him out. He's already said last night, he's going to move on to Cuba, he's going to move on to Greenland. Okay. We will be dumped.
Hold on, Nick. Can you just shelve your view of Donald Trump for a moment? I know a lot of people find it impossible, but there is the commercial argument now about the Strait of Hormuz. Donald Trump probably should not have done what he's done. I'm with you. There doesn't seem to be an end plan. But what there is enormous commercial pain for the United Kingdom. In supplies to an island, obviously an island nation such as you. The history we have of military and commercial ties with it. So suspend your views of Donald Trump. I know people find it impossible. But on that aspect, should that inform Sir Keir Starmer what the United Kingdom does?
Yes, and I think the United Kingdom should stick with Europe and our other proper allies, because the United States is clearly not an ally anymore. Okay. We need to stick together with them and go and do a completely different route that does not involve anything to do with Donald Trump or his corrupt family.
So that would be, and I'm not saying it's wrong, if you look at the examples of France and Germany, they're seeking to negotiate with Tehran so that they can get oil supplies through. Would that be something you think the United Kingdom should explore?
It should be a part of it. I think we need to be negotiating with the Middle East, not with Donald Trump. We cannot be attached to Donald Trump, who is doing things like blowing up defenseless Iranian ships in international waters, blowing up children's schools, illegal acts.
Absolutely horrific. And I hear what you say, but if you can just, and I know some people find it impossible, if you just separate the argument about Donald Trump, no one is in his corner on this particular idea of bombing schools, for I can assure you, but if we look at Sir Keir's involvement and what decisions he makes for the future of this country and, of course, for the protection of citizens here, both militarily and economically, that's what we're debating. Joe, thank you for your input on that. We will have more voices. Plus, as we told you in the first hour, Britain's largest car park operator is in administration after nearly 100 years in operation, with more than £350 million of liabilities. This was discussed in the first hour by the editor-in-chief of City AM, Christian May.
Britain's biggest car park operator, National Car Parks. They've got 340 sites across the UK. There are about 600 jobs at risk. PwC has been called in to try and save the business.
So where are we parking our cars? Or we're simply not bringing them into cities and towns. How did that business go wrong? We'll look at that. It's 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
A government minister has told Nick that UK-US relations remain deep and important despite renewed criticism over the Iran war. President Trump says he's unhappy with Sir Keir Starmer's refusal to help unblock the Strait of Hormuz. It's been confirmed a strain of meningitis B is among cases identified in Kent where two people have died. Thousands of people are being tracked down for preventative antibiotics linked to a nightclub in Canterbury. And Scotland could become the first UK nation to legalise assisted dying. MSPs will have their final vote on the bill tonight and won't be bound by party lines. LBC weather, a cloudy morning for many, some bright spells for England and Wales later, a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search Prison Jobs now.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
At Kia, we know that inspiration begins with a first. Your first job, your first love, your first home. Now it's time for your first drive in the new Kia EV2 at our First Drive weekends. It's your chance to be one of the first to test drive the Kia EV2 with its innovative technology and elegant eye-catching design. It's small in size, but big in personality. Discover what driving electric really means. Search Kia First Drive weekends to reserve your place today.
Kia, movement that inspires.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Right, let's stay with our conversation concern. We'll come to the collapse of NCP in a moment. Chandra Newcastle, though, has been holding. Now, for the UK aspect of this and the commercial aspect as explored by that newspaper, what should Sir Starmer be doing? Good morning.
Very good morning, Nick. It's a synthetic argument to say that offering military support will protect our commercial interests, because expert after expert says even if the conflict ends today, it will take weeks and months and probably beyond for the Strait of Hormuz matter to be resolved, because it's an asymmetric. It's the clue is in the geometry. Iran controls that piece of land. And it's several hundred miles of coastline. Mm-hmm. And you also have to bear in mind what's happening on the other side within the Middle East. You've got
If the Strait of Hormuz stays closed, the commercial impacts are enormous for the United Kingdom.
It's the practicalities. How are you going? I mean, where is the plan? I mean,
I agree there is no plan. But we've also got to plan for the fact that we, I'll try again, as an island nation, are particularly susceptible to this. So what do we do? We've got to get oil at some point.
So military action is only a tiny component of a really larger conversation. Okay. Now, if we are really interested in protecting our commercial interests, the conversation needs to be about what insurance companies are doing, because insurance companies have to take a bit more risk, because at the moment, weeks or months after the conflict ends...
I'm sorry, I don't see how insurance companies are to blame. It's how you get oil through.
It's the practicalities of large sums of money. It's about these ships, every one of these ships is insured, and these insurance companies make a decision on whether or not the ship moves.
Right.
Now, it's not just about protecting the sea, it's also about big commercial players that make the decision in relation to this, and it's a part of the world which is more or less dictated by or governed by the Iranian control. So we shouldn't have been in this place in the very first.
I know a lot of people would agree, but we are where we are. We're not where we want to be. So that's what drives the decision. Lastly, Chandra.
But the solution is not military.
Okay. All right. I still don't know quite how the insurance company is the solution. Chandra, thank you. I think Paul in Tower Hamlets. Paul, we are where we are. We're not where we want to be. So what do we do next? Good morning.
Morning there, Nick. I have to say, I think at this point, the war is what it is, right? There's no way of saying that we aren't necessarily involved as an ally of America. Rightly or wrongly, I think it needs to be hurried up. Commercially, fuel's gone through the roof. I mean, yep. I drive mostly for a living, and I've noticed fuel go from anywhere from like £1.35 up to £1.80, almost near on £2 a litre. It's ridiculous. I'm not in agreement of just going to war. No one is, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But given the state of things, I think, yeah, do you know what? Let's hurry it up, get it over and done with, and we can all get it back.
Sorry, when you say get it over and done, what do you mean by get it over and done with?
Well, I think ultimately we've got a duty to assist America. As one of your other callers said, maybe we could supply ships to assist them in other areas, not necessarily in combat, but we could essentially assist and essentially speed this war up and get it over and done with.
That seems to imply that there's a plan. Do you think there is a plan either at the White House or the Pentagon?
That I can't answer. I don't think so necessarily. I think there is an ideology behind it, or...
There's certainly an ideology, but whether there's an idea, that is the key, of course.
I don't think necessarily that there is a fixed, firm plan, but I think ultimately people are dying. People are... You know, it's not great.
They are dying. Yes,
and I'm probably putting that mildly, but ultimately I think that this war is we're involved, regardless whether we want to be or not, and I think we need to assist.
All right. Paul, thank you, and we'll return to that conversation in a moment. Now, to other matters. And in the first hour, we described the decline of the car park firm NCP in administration, liabilities of more than £350 million, almost 700 jobs at risk. Now, reportedly, it's struggled to fill spaces since the pandemic, and that's changed commuting and, of course, shopping habits. People aren't coming in. They have around 340 sites, and this is something that I discussed in our regular look at the world of business with Christian May, who's editor-in-chief at City AM.
Yeah, very familiar sight. People driving into town centres, city centres, looking for somewhere to park. You would have thought, perhaps, wouldn't you, that this was a bit of a cash cow,
yeah.
Just a big, fat stationary asset that charges people to come in and out all day, every day. It's a fairly extraordinary company that grew out of the ashes of blitzed London and some land purchases, which evolved over time to be these great concrete edifices into which we would all drive our cars and pay for the privilege. It's actually subsequently become owned by a Japanese entity, I think. Anyway, they have gone into administration. No laughing matter. Britain's biggest car park operator, National Car Parks. They've got 340 sites across the UK. There are about 600 jobs at risk. PwC has been called in to try and save the business. They're going to keep operating. They're going to keep these sites open for now. And PwC have observed that this firm has basically deteriorated over a number of years. Post-COVID, they say, as demand for parking has not recovered, people driving into town and city centres has not bounced back, and indeed commuter locations, where you can imagine they would have made a great deal of money, have suffered. If people are only going into towns and cities 2 to 3 days a week, that's going to have quite a sizable impact. So they have not been doing as well as you may have at first glance thought, and there will now be an effort underway to try to save as much of the business as possible.
Well, this is what you've been saying. So there doesn't seem to be any tears being shed for NCP. Max says, NCP car parks, the spaces are just too small for modern cars. You can't fit larger vehicles into them anymore. It feels like they've tried to squeeze in more spaces at the expense of practicality, and it's putting people off parking there altogether. No surprise they're losing customers now heading into administration. Funny enough, Max, I had to park at a supermarket yesterday, and I thought the bays were a bit small. And that's the car, by the way, not me. Alan in Pimlico, I'm delighted. Well, are you delighted? There's 700 people out of work, but I'll read on. Their enormous rates, sharp practices, and filthy and smelly premises is awful, the service, and that has caused this. Well, we decided to have a quick look at just how much it costs, and I appreciate this is London, so if you have an NCP and you're in another city or a town, I'd love to hear the prices, but this is quite expensive. So to park for the day, so that's 9 a.m. through to until 5 p.m., in Soho, it would be £60, the same in Knightsbridge. Harley Street, if you had medical affairs to send to, that's £50. Bloomsbury Square, £38. And King's Cross, £30. When you think this is just a site with relatively low maintenance, all right, you've got to put bulbs in the lights, I imagine, and occasionally clean it. How have they gone bust? If you want to talk about NCP more, here we go. This is coming in. France says, hardly surprising, ULEZ and anti-car policies have led to less cars in the city. John says, this totally comes down to COVID and congestion charge. Why would people want to do this, particularly many who are working from home? And if you want to come into town, you just get in a train and then jump a taxi. I suppose, if you're charging £60 a day, that is a vast amount of money, isn't it? And if you had to do that 2 or 3 days a week, that's getting close to a mortgage, isn't it? We might talk car parks, but we are talking Iran and what the British reaction should be. They've been rather harangued, in a sense, by Donald Trump. Not that that means should lean to any action, but there are commercial interests afoot. Jason in Edgware. Jason, your take on this. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. What I was going to say was that we should leave it alone. It's not our war.
No,
the best thing that could happen... the best thing that could happen is that Donald Trump loses power. And with oil prices going up, midterms coming along, there's a good chance that the Americans will vote in a bunch of Democrats.
Well, he doesn't. He ignores the Senate. He just ignores all regulations.
Yes,
all,
but they will impeach him.
Let's come back. Okay. I don't know that you can determine foreign and domestic policy on whether a president might be impeached or not. What you do have to look at is the commercial impact for the United Kingdom. Now, you may say that it's a price worth paying, and you may well be right. We continue to watch heating oil and other prices soar, and we just live with that, do we? I'm asking.
Well, we haven't got any choice, because at this point, it's going to take absolutely months, or possibly years, for it to come back.
Well, we do have a choice. We could do what France and Italy is doing, which is seeking to negotiate with Tehran.
Well, we could do that, but anything to put Trump out of power would be...
Can you just... It's impossible, isn't it, to have a conversation. Look, I can understand how you feel that. Can you just, and I know people find it impossible, suspend your utter dislike of Donald Trump to talk about what Britain needs to do in Britain's interests. So if you can just shelve your desire for him to be impeached, whatever it might be, what should they do? Do we start talking to Tehran and then definitely lose the special relationship? What the hell's going on? The special relationship for now. Are you at a shop of me? Yes.
I am. I just walked into the shop. I think, personally, that we should get rid of...
Pardon?
No, I'm not buying helmets. You just reminded me to buy helmets. Sorry. No, my view is that we should stay out of it purely because there is no winning thing. Okay, mate, I wouldn't want to deal with Tehran. I wouldn't want to deal with the Ayatollahs. But I think we're in a no-win situation.
Don't forget your Nectar card or your Tesco Plus points, whatever it might be, and go and get that hummus, Jason. I can help tell you're a little distracted, but thank you very much for calling and having a sense of humour. Shall we talk car parks? Wes is in Hammersmith. How surprised were you to hear that NCP has gone bust, Wes? Good morning.
Well, good morning, Nick. I think they're too greedy.
They are.
You know, the
high
prices
costs,
are ridiculous. And then you've got to think about it, especially if you're parking in central London. You've got congestion charge, ULEZ charge. The prices are, like, astronomical. So I think it's kind of like a bit of greed that's got to them, really. And they said they deserve the administration.
Okay. How often do you use them?
Well, I don't use them at all.
Because they're just too expensive. I mean, they are. So I have used them, but it's always the last resort, isn't it? You try and find
definitely.
A meter, you try and find anything. And the last resort is you go to an NCP because you're just going to be late for the meeting or late for the theatre or late for dinner or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And plus, also, if your car's over a certain size, you have a problem manoeuvring in most of them nowadays anyway.
Now, that's interesting. That was made by Max as a text. See, I haven't been in an NCP for some time, and I'm probably going to use one later this week for reasons I won't bore you with, and I just wanted to get my GP in. Wes, thank you. Jason in Nottingham, your view on the collapse of NCP. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. I have no hummus in the fridge.
this is like a code. I love it.
So I live right in the middle of the lace market in Nottingham city centre.
Right.
And I park my car, rent a space in the NCP car park.
Right.
Right on the top floor, behind security shutters, got a little fob and stuff to get in.
Yeah.
I pay £100 a month to rent that space.
How often are you in there? Are you in there 5 days a week?
Yeah, I work from home. I sort of stay in hotels a couple of nights a week, work away with work, but I work from home, so I'm there 24 hours a day, 30 days a month.
I don't think that's
a bargain.
I don't think that's bad at all. Oh, right. We agree. I don't think that's bad at all.
No, it's an absolute bargain, and it's right in the city centre. If I was to park there and pay the daily rate, I think it's about £17.50 a day.
Wow. So that's 300. That's more like 4. Yeah, you're probably paying about a quarter of what you... When you heard of the firm's collapse, how did you react then, Jason?
With panic. I'm going to have to move because, I mean, there's no way I could pay 20 quid a day to park at home. I'd have to move out of the flat into somewhere else.
Thanks, your call. Jason, safe driving. You have got a bargain there. Well done to you. Jason hasn't got any hummus, but I wonder if he fancies a curry.
The oldest Indian restaurant in the UK that served the likes of Mahatma Gandhi and Charlie Chaplin's turned 100 years old but could face closure from royalty. I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the story.
Just turned 9:46, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A government minister has moved to play down President Trump's latest criticism of the UK for its response to the Iran war. It's been confirmed a strain of meningitis B is among cases identified in Kent, where two people have died. And Ukraine's leader Volodymyr Zelensky is meeting Keir Starmer in Downing Street as Britain and Ukraine sign a new defence deal. LBC weather, a cloudy morning for many, some bright spells for England and Wales. Later, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The Archies on the A20 Swanley Bypass going out of town after an accident earlier before the M25, so all the lanes are open now. On the A13, the Archies going into town after a car broke down earlier after the Beckton roundabout. In East Dulwich, Lordship Lane northbound is closed between East Dulwich Grove and the Goose Green roundabout because of a gas leak. The Archies in Mayfair, Berkeley Street southbound is blocked between Mayfair Place and Piccadilly. That's because a bus has broken down. There were long delays in Bermondsey on Towerbridge Road in both directions at Caledonian Market because of roadworks. On the trains, that are delays of up to half an hour and cancellations between King's Cross and Stevenage is after there was an investigation earlier, so that's affecting services on the East Coast mainline, including LNER, Thameslink and Great Northern.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Never mind the rest of us. Does Donald Trump have the first idea what Donald Trump is doing in the Middle East? And have Labour got the answer to youth unemployment?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Pain in my hip.
I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
A Southern Train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one third with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Aye, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
With over 50 years experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's talk car parks. Not a lot of sympathy, David. NCP have milked their customers for decades, so much so they've lost volume and they've collapsed. All businesses should be wary of milking their customers. Interesting. This comes in from, where's your name? Ray. I parked my van around Old Street area of London, cost me £54 for 4 hours, £108 a day plus C charge, congestion charge. That's a fortune, isn't it? Oh, here we go. This comes in from Jennifer. I went to the newsagent's show in Edinburgh last year with my mother. Parking in the NCP car park for the duration of dinner and the show cost £20 more than both tickets combined. I agree they've got greedy. The prices make it prohibitive for people to drive into cities. Hopefully whatever fills the vacuum replaces some of the lost jobs and is more reasonably priced. Josh is in Croydon. Josh, your story about NCPs. They are expensive. We're hearing that. Good morning.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you. What do you make of the NCP, the decline and fall of NCP?
I'm not surprised, to be honest. So my quick story is that I used to have a street food store by St. Paul's Cathedral.
You used to have
A street food store.
Oh, street food, lovely. Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I used to drive up 2 days a week and park my car all day, mm-hmm. and it costed about £50 to £60 to park there for the whole day.
Right.
Now, if I just parked in a single yellow line, which is right outside my store, someone could come along and put a fine on my car and it'll be 60 odd quid. But that's only if they come along and give me the fine. So if they only find
and
me...
And you've got the convenience
time,
of parking exactly where you want to,
exactly,
where you want to be.
Rather than 10 minutes down the road. So I parked right where I wanted. And if they only came along half the time and gave me a fine...
You're ahead.
That's fine.
But hold on. I get it. And you all your kit, you just get it out of the boot or the back of the car.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
Weren't you worried you get clamped? Or do they not clamp?
No, they didn't clamp.
What, they don't clamp for just what, a single yellow
line? And the thing is, well, it's right in my eye line, isn't it?
Oh,
it's
I see.
It's right opposite my stool.
I see, okay. What? When do they clamp? Is it if you're parked on a double yellow you get clamped? Do you know, I don't even... It's so long since I've driven in London.
I don't even know.
No one me. Anyway, you got away with... Josh, I can understand it. That's the economics of it. Thank you for that, Josh. We must look up. Why do they... Is it... Let's just clarify. Why do they suddenly decide... I bet if that's... So you're on a red route or something like that. It'll be something... Let's talk about the route of the Strait of Hormuz. Mariana points out friendly ships are being escorted through the strait, therefore no mines yet. That's the escalation that will happen if we and others join in. Same subject. Robin Andover, you negotiate with Iran for all ships other than the US and Israel to go through the straits. We stay well away from that illegal war. Let's talk about that. John, I'm so sorry, John, that was totally my fault. I misread that. John in Burton-on-Trent. You're on the radio, John. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning, Nick. First-time caller. So
good to have you on. Thank you, sir. What are you going to tell me?
Thank you. Well, I'm not going to mention a certain man's name, okay, because you've told enough of us already. But commercially, I agree with Starmer on this instance. I'm not a Starmer lover,
right?
But I agree with him that he's taken a measured approach.
Yep.
Because effectively, we don't have the resources to start with.
But what about the commercial aspect now, John?
On the commercial aspect, We're actually shooting myself in the foot as well as a government, commercially.
Yeah.
Because I think what we can look at now is the reliance of oil and gas globally.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, we have an energy minister who is so focused on net zero that what we have as a resource off our coast, the east coast of the UK, is still so much of it there. I mean, I was in the oil and gas business for nearly 25 years.
Right.
I've worked all over the world, Nick.
Yes.
And I've seen how... I mean, there's no one better as an example than Norway on what they did with it.
John, thank you for that input. I'm going to finish. Great to have you as a first-timer. Be like John. First time. First class. Get it off your chest. Get it on the radio. 45 seconds to Claire in Gloucester. Claire, what should the United Kingdom position be commercially? Good morning.
Really glad to speak to you on this because you're one of very few people that seems to be not have their head in the sand about the situation. Europe depends, the UK and Europe depends on gas and oil from the Persian Gulf. Therefore, to pretend that we don't need to do something to help the Americans open the Straits of Hormuz and make it safe for shipping is just delusional. And the other aspect is, irrespective of whether it's Trump or somebody else in the White House, we are totally dependent for our defence on NATO and therefore on the United States.
Brilliantly summed up, Claire. Thank you, and thanks for your kind words about the show, because we're going to finish after this conversation about war and goodness as well. So who fancies a curry? Well, Vera Swamy is the oldest restaurant to achieve a Michelin star, claims to be the oldest Indian restaurant in the UK. It's just turned 100 years old. It's played host to diners including Mahatma Gandhi and the King of Denmark. It served customers during the Blitz in the Second World War. But this famous establishment on London's Regent Street is now due to close after a dispute with the landlord, the Crown Estate. They want to move the restaurant out and convert the building into offices. LBC's Henry Riley went to meet Vera Swamy's co-owner, Ranjit Matarani. He probably had a qualm or two and then filed this report.
Suppose we were a European or British restaurant of the same vintage serving British or European food. Would they have treated us the same way? Is it because they don't recognise the value and importance of Indian gastronomy?
It's a time for celebration at Veeraswamy, as owner Ranjit Mathurani marks the restaurant's 100th birthday.
Veeraswamy is probably, almost certainly, the oldest surviving Indian restaurant in the world. It was created by the great-grandson of a British general and a Mughal princess. Maybe restaurants should have been older than us, like Rules or Wilton's in the 1800s and 1900s. There are very few restaurants in the last 50 years which have celebrated the 100th anniversary.
With an impressive list of past diners.
People like Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, Jawaharlal Nehru, Charlie Chaplin, Eva Gardner, Yul Brynner, the Maharajas of India, the Prince of Wales, the King of Denmark donated Carlsberg beer here, which led to the Indian curry with beer as an activity. More recently, it's been Princess Anne and Sir Tim Lawrence. Lord Cameron has been here.
This award-winning restaurant opened its doors just a month before the birth of Queen Elizabeth II on the 16th of March 1926. They even twice catered for the late monarch at Buckingham Palace, but Ranjit Mathurani says they're not there to be a relic.
Got a Michelin star 10 years ago, and so as a restaurant is not a museum. It is one of the most successful current Indian restaurants in the world.
But despite currying favour with customers, there is a worry that it's last orders and that royalty may be in part to blame. Their landlord, the Crown Estate, has informed them that their lease will not be renewed, despite protests outside Buckingham Palace and a petition that was signed by leading chefs.
Suddenly, out of the blue, they said they were not going to renew our lease. Unfortunately, the Crown Estates have not behaved in a very responsible fashion. They have shifted the grounds from wanting 11 square metres on the ground floor. They then said they needed more rent. They have refused to engage with us.
Mr. Mathurani does not want to move and even wants the King to intervene.
People, grandchildren, sons, daughters, engagements, marriages, anniversaries have all played their role here because this has been a place to which people came for special events. Even if you move location, you lose a large part of that allure and magical charm.
Henry Riley reporting while playing the sitar. Now, a Crown Estate spokesman says it's disappointing for Veeraswamy. It added, we need to carry out a comprehensive refurbishment of Victory House to both bring it up to modern standards and into full use. That's it for today. If you missed the show, listen back on the free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I was struggling a bit this morning to find an appropriate or a suitable word to articulate the thought that I have. And I think we've stumbled across it. Do you remember when people, usually fully paid up members of the Boris Johnson, Brexit, Liz Truss fan clubs, would use the phrase Trump derangement syndrome as an insult directed at people who were describing every aspect of the US president's character and performance with almost clinical accuracy? It's a good word, deranged, or derangement, because it clearly now describes the president. He is a deranged liar. Why do people who know that still struggle to admit it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Israel's defence minister says two top Iranian security officials have been killed in Tehran. It follows the latest round of US-Israeli bombardments overnight. LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks has the latest.
If the claims by Israel's defense minister are correct, then two more key figures within the Iranian regime have been killed in the latest overnight attacks on Tehran. Ali Larijani was the country's top security official. Just 3 weeks ago, he was in Geneva leading Iran's delegation in talks with the United States. Also assassinated, Gholam Reza Soleimani, the commander of Iran's besieged militia, accused by many Iranians of the brutal repression of demonstrators in the country earlier this year.
A government minister has played down tensions with the United States after President Trump renewed his criticism over the Iran war. Donald Trump wants allies to help unblock the Strait of Hormuz, a key route for transporting oil. Mr. Trump says he once saw the UK as the Rolls-Royce of allies, but is disappointed by the reluctance to get more involved. Treasury Minister Dan Tomlinson told LBC this morning the latest remarks shouldn't be a cause for concern.
From time to time, presidents and prime ministers will come to different judgments. I'm really confident that the Prime Minister has taken the right decision when it comes to not having us trying to engage with what I think at one point was termed regime change from the sky in Iran. Yes, you know, we don't support the Iranian regime, but we do want to make sure that we are protecting British national interests.
It's been confirmed a strain of meningitis B is among cases identified in Kent where two people have died. Thousands of people are being tracked down for preventative antibiotics linked to a nightclub in Canterbury. Anyone who went to Club Chemistry on the 5th, 6th or 7th of March have been told to contact health officials. Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky is due to meet with Keir Starmer in Downing Street as Britain and Ukraine sign a new defence deal. Number 10 says it'll bring together expertise to manufacture and supply drones. And the Chancellor is to announce £2.5 billion of funding for artificial intelligence and quantum computing. Rachel Rees will use a speech in London this morning to say she's committed to the UK having the fastest adoption of AI in the G7. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 49 at 10,366. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, a cloudy start for many, some bright spells for England and Wales later, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. The breaking news, as you just heard in your news bulletin, is that the Secretary of Iran's Intelligence Services, their key security chief, has, according to reports from Israel, been removed from the map, been killed in this probably illegal war. He was also Iran's chief nuclear negotiator between 2005 and 2007. More on that as and when it emerges. But we find ourselves once again contemplating... what do you do if there's only one story in town? It's happened a surprising amount of times in the last few years. You're probably going to correct me on this, but prior to 2016, I don't remember it happening at all. Every day there would be two or three things vying for our attention at an absolute minimum. But during COVID, certainly, and during Brexit, you just felt that it would be inappropriate to talk about anything else. This is just me, by the way. It's not in any way a criticism, veiled or otherwise, of other people. Criticisms would involve talking about absolute rubbish to avoid acknowledging how wrong you were about the big stuff going on in the world. That criticisms there galore, either veiled or unveiled, whatever you prefer. But you can't have a news bulletin, for example, that's only got one story in it, can you? It would be weird. Except when there is something like COVID in its very early days, or indeed a war in its very early days. Look at Ukraine. Look at Volodymyr Zelensky's visit to Keir Starmer today, and argue, if you dare, with the observation that public interest wanes. It waxes and it wanes, and the news both reflects and creates that process. I don't know. I find it fascinating. I know you may not, because I do it for a living, and you don't. Well, most of you don't. I did receive a message earlier today from one of my favourite broadcasters asking for advice on where he can get a mug like mine. I might leave you to guess who that was, because I haven't checked whether or not they'd be comfortable with having their privacy stripped away. But if you don't do it for a living, maybe it isn't as fascinating to you as it is to me. Do you know why it's so important and so interesting? Listen, and this is unlikely, frankly, because it would render you somebody who's probably not intellectually qualified to listen to this programme. But if you feel yourself groaning when I point out the four donkeys of the Cropopolips and their relevance to everything that's going on today, you're missing a huge point. We would not now be facing what we're facing with Donald Trump if our political and media establishment had correctly reported and responded to the triple disasters of Brexit, Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. The quadruple disasters, in fact, of austerity, Brexit, Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. If you're creating an ecosystem in which the truth doesn't matter, and the deranged, and more on that word in a moment, in which the deranged can prevail, in which a deranged liar can rule. Now, we probably wouldn't have been able to affect the American election result, but we certainly wouldn't be looking at newspapers in this country that have chosen to report the deranged liar's latest insults and latest obnoxious attacks upon our dignified and democratically elected Prime Minister. We certainly wouldn't be living in a country where organs like the Daily Mail feel compelled to report it from Trump's perspective, or with Trump in the box seat, or with their head so far up Trump's backside that when he breaks wind, they whistle. I think it's all linked. If you want to understand how the truly terrible things happening now can have been permitted to happen, you can't just focus on the destination. You want to understand how you got to a destination, you've got to look at the steps on the road, the steps on the path to that place. This is, if anything, if I have anything close to a world view or a philosophy, this is it. It's the boiling the frog doctrine. It's the idea that none of us would have supported or even perhaps contemplated the likelihood of Z existing if it wasn't for the 25 previous letters. So they sold you A, and then they sold you B, and then they sold you C. And A was fairly mild, and B was just a tiny bit more bonkers, and C was relatively straightforward, and D was debatable, and E was not extraordinary, and F was flipping. You see what I mean? And then suddenly it's Z, and you're saying, oh yeah, we're having a discussion in the United Kingdom about whether we should send our forces to help a deranged liar dig himself out of a hole that he's dug for no reason other than, and then you insert whatever theory you prefer, whether it is Marco Rubio's contention that he is just dancing to Benjamin Netanyahu's tune, or whether he has taken complete leave of his senses, or whether he's been paid a huge sum of money to undertake this ludicrous war, or whether he did it because he thought that his approval ratings would bounce in the way that George W. Bush's did after the invasion of Iraq. You just pick your theory, and it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter because it's Z. We're at Z now. We're actually having debates in this country about whether the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom is right or wrong not to jump into bed with a deranged liar and start bouncing about with abandon. That's question number one. Question number two about whether or not we respond to attacks upon our allies, and question number three, whether or not we get involved in attempts to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, are, as I fear not enough people are pointing out, they're three completely different questions. And they all involve returning to the Chilcot checklist. And that is what Starmer is doing, returning to the Chilcot checklist, returning to international law.